Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That's why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Kevin, still chilly?
Lights, Camera, Barstool starts freaking out.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 181. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jactrill Ball, and we got a big episode today. Big one. We're reviewing In Bruges, a little nostalgia Netflix review. In Bruges this week, then we're going to have 40-Year-Old Virgin next Sunday. And then we're going to have a new slate of movies to talk about. We're reviewing that today. And D23 was this weekend, Disney Comic Con, and they just dropped a ton of shit. I mean, there is the most overwhelming news gathering I've ever done for our rundown. It's an insane amount of stuff. And on top of that, there was a bunch of stuff that happened outside of D23 this week. Breaking Bad movie, a bunch of political movies that I don't actually want to talk about, but we'll talk about. But yeah, there's a lot to discuss today. But other than movies, what's going on?
It's a lot going on in the news.
Yeah, you're also shout out to your favorite NFL team,
the Browns. They're looking good. Yeah, good for Andrew Luck.
Are you going to switch teams now?
No, I don't think I'm going to switch teams. I just,
That'd be a crazy move.
I can't. I'm too old to switch teams. I like the Colts. Still like the Colts. I don't know if I like the management, but the team. I'll still root for the team.
And I'll root for Andrew Luck. They didn't have a Swiss cheese offensive line for like 10 years. Like literally every year Luck was a quarterback except for this last year.
Yeah. I was on a Reddit last night in the Rip Trill thread. I said it's managerial malpractice what they did to Andrew Luck at the start of his career. And by the start of his career, I mean 5 seasons. I completely get it. And best wishes. I'm all for supporting somebody quitting something. That rules.
Yeah.
All that matters, not all that matters. Sorry to Colts fans, but all that matters beyond that is this might finally mean the death of one of the least liked Twitter accounts, and that is the General Andrew Luck. Unless you're a member of sports media, in which it's the greatest account of all time. But there's a lot of victory laps last night saying, hey, if there's any silver lining, at least General Andrew Luck may finally be done on Twitter.
They had a really crappy send-off.
They did. It stunk.
Like, just really poo-pooing out into the night. I thought they'd have like a much better like...
Oh, yeah, you thought this would be their magnum opus?
Yeah. Like, but they waited so long. They waited like a full day to answer, and then their answer stunk.
Yeah, unlike the other tweets that they sent, which were good.
Look.
This one was bad.
Look, was I would be willing to forgive all, like, years and years and years of their terrible tweets if they just had, like, a really good death, like, rattle. I'd be okay with that.
Dearest Martha, I shitted my pants.
I would have thought. See,
fell into the creek and died of dysentery.
Hung out with Mary Todd. Still beat my queen.
I'm sending you this letter from hell. Yeah. Look, I'm happy. I'm happy for Andy.
He's in hell with the Will McAvoy CFN account, whatever that was.
Oh, yes. Or the tweet of God.
Yes. All three of them are just hanging out in Twitter hell.
Whatever.
Rest in peace, you losers.
Whatever. You know what? Who cares? Who cares about football? We're talking movies today.
Hell yeah. Yes, we are.
One more thing.
Oh, yeah. No, go for it.
New Taylor Swift album.
Okay, so I was going to ask you at one point. Pop. Okay, yeah, no, I was going to ask you at the end of news, but do it now.
No, I'm just going to say, originally I was going to go through all the track listings and just tell you every single track's a bop, but it's an album full of bops. Taylor never really left, okay? Reputation wasn't the best work of her career, but she is back with Lover. This album is fantastic.
I haven't listened to it yet, so I don't want to give it
a shot. It's genius.
I enjoy it. It's not my favorite Taylor. I do enjoy it, though. I will say, a little more excited that we're going to get to hear all of her old music re-recorded again, because that's how she's dunking on Scooter Braun. She's like, okay, you won't give me the masters of my songs? I'm just going to remake them, which is also going to make her an assload of money somehow, some way. So I'm excited for that as well. It's a good album, though. Good for her. This is not an original thought. I know, Troy, you're really on this. She released the shittiest songs from the album as her singles.
She did. Yeah. Me and You Need to Calm Down and The Archer, some of the weakest songs. But Lover was the last. Actually, I don't even know if that was a real single. I think that was like a promo single, and she did a music video. Really good song. But I went to TMZ. Cause I just was like, I just Googled Taylor Swift. Cause I wanted to see who she was. Now I wanted to see how the album was doing. TMZ had an article up. It was very pro Scooter Braun. Very surprising.
Interesting.
They're very much in Scooter Braun's camp. And I just got to say, I respect the hell out of what she's doing here, because her fans are just going to boycott all those old streams and go to the definitive versions. I wonder if she'll re-record the songs in the way she originally recorded them, like the original, if she'll do Teardrops on My Guitar in a country style, or if she'll modernize it a little bit more.
Why I'm looking forward to it. Like, I feel like there's some, even if it's the original, it's still a different voice. She's much older.
Well, her voice is way better now.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. And even not as like a giant Taylor Swift fan, like, you know what? That's also just cool. She's just going to do that. Like, that's neat. But I was happy for Swifties and for Trill. That's a good album. It's very happy for you.
One and the same.
Yep. It's true. I apologize for not just saying I was happy for Swifties and just everyone assuming you're in that camp.
I wanted to do a skit. I think about skits I want to do, and I just never get around to doing them because I'm just burnt out. But I was thinking about a skit where, like, my wife would play like some teen girls talking about the new Taylor Swift album in a mall. And then I would just come into the conversation like, a Cornelia Street fucking bop. And to be like, get out of here. But I thought that would be in bad taste.
Yeah, it might be. I like that, though.
I don't want to characterize myself like that, so I'll just stay away. Yeah.
You do have a lot of great skit ideas. Just they just live in our group. It's okay.
It's fine. It's fine.
Everyone liked the NBA 2K skit from last week.
No, they didn't.
The best was that at the end, Ken Jack's like, I'll edit that in post. And you're like, just cut it out. And I just left it as is. Just left it right in the pod.
Yeah, it was working better in my head.
It was good. It was a good time. Yeah, so that is that for non-news. We do have to get into news. I don't like rushing, but there is so much fucking news. And I want to be able to sit down and talk about it in Bruges. We are going to be reviewing... Angel Has Fallen this week, which is getting like good reviews for the trilogy, but when you compare it to movies, it's getting bad reviews. just like regular movies, it's not good. Fights will be on for that. And he also is going to be dumping off his Fast and Furious rankings at the end of the pod, because he had him ready to go, but then he couldn't come on the podcast. PFT was going to be on today, but timing didn't work because, you know, part of my take, you know, it's one of the top three podcasts in the world. I couldn't gum up his schedule, so we're going to have him on when he doesn't have to rush and do a million things. So anyway, that's that on that. This episode brought to you in part by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a simpler way, as you all know, to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. They save you time and money. by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices, find amazing deals. You get the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats. It'll always fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Used it recently. Going Browns Seahawks in October. Very excited. Haven't been to a Browns home game in, let's see, their quarterback was it was Brandon Whedon's rookie first start as a rookie and Trent Richardson's first NFL game last time I went to a Browns game. So, you SeatGeek. Hooked us up. Yeah, it was a great game.
Remember when the Colts traded for Trent Richardson?
For a first-round pick, baby. And then the Browns used it to draft Johnny Manziel. That's one of the craziest trades in NFL history. I saw Michael Vick and Brandon Whedon throw a combined 8 interceptions on the opening game of the season for the two teams. Unbelievable.
Future XFL players.
Hell yeah. Maybe. And Andrew Luck. Future. I love the conspiracy that Andrew Luck's going to go play in the XFL. Well, I mean, what an insane conspiracy. Though it'd be kind of funny to watch him throw like 80 touchdowns.
Oh, dude, that'd be awesome if he just lit it up.
Just carved them up. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LIGHTS, LIGHTS today. That's promo code LIGHTS for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the SeatGeek app. Trust me, if you're buying tickets, especially in football season, now you folks are going to sporting events. All four sports, major sports, are going to be geared up again soon, so you got to do it. All right, let's get into the first piece of news.
Just want to note that if you want to skip over anything from D23 that we talk about, just a reminder to scroll down and look at the timestamps, because we do go into a ton of D23 things here, from Marvel to Star Wars to the regular Disney animation stuff to some of the live action movies, Disney Plus. It's a lot of D23 content. If you want to skip any of that, go to Imbruge. Just a reminder, time codes below.
Big off the top, Star Wars. D23 had a ton of Star Wars news. So this is how we're going to kind of do this here. They revealed footage. They revealed like a sizzle reel.
Oh, yeah.
It's not online yet.
Oh, no.
It's going to be online Monday. They've never done that. They've not released the sizzle reel along with Comic-Con or D23. So for the sake of not having too much redundancy, we're going to gloss over the sizzle reel very quickly. I want to bring up one thing about the sizzle reel, and then I'll talk about the poster that was released, because we're going to talk about it on the later in the week episode. We actually get to see what's in there. Apparently what you see in the sizzle reel, like 3PO has red eyes. You hear the Emperor speak. Rey has a double-sided lightsaber type thing that like it folds into one and then it splits into two lightsabers, which is something that was actually seen in Star Wars Rebels, the animated TV series. But apparently it's a red saber. And then Zori Bliss, played by Carrie Russell, apparently her character, who some people, I think we've all kind of speculated a little bit, have said maybe that's Rey's mom. She has a relationship and a history. I'm not saying like a love interest relationship with Poe Dameron. Mm-hmm. So that's like kind of out of that. But there is a poster that came out.
I'm shipping.
Hell yeah. There's a poster. It's not a theatrical poster. The posters that come out of D23 and Comic-Con, they're typically more like artsy and very basic. This one is. I think the whole thing is like cartoonish, essentially. But it shows the Emperor peering over Rey and Kylo fighting. So cool poster. Some of that stuff's cool. Any quick thoughts on that? Because again, I don't want to have two episodes in a row where we just talk about the same thing, especially since we haven't seen it yet.
It's astounding we didn't get a leak of that.
They locked the phones in a bag.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Because otherwise they'd get a leak of that. I'm still amazed we didn't get a leak of that, or they just didn't drop it when it happened. Because now they're going to do it on GMA, right? That's when they're gonna sizzle it on GMA.
Actually, I didn't see that. I just saw it. I honestly, there's a link that said the Star Wars teaser will drop on Monday, and I didn't click the link. I guess that's a good indication of why people use clickbait, because I didn't get baited into clicking it, so I didn't click it. I was like, okay, it'll just be on Twitter. But yeah, so the sizzle will be out Monday. We'll talk about it Tuesday. I don't know if you have thoughts there, Ken, Jack, anything on the anything pressing on the sizzle, or do we? I mean, I don't think as much as we haven't seen it.
Yeah, got to see it before you can make too many comments on it, right? Because it's all just hearsay at this point.
And I would tread very lightly on thinking an evil Rey is a real thing.
Evil Rey, it would be sick as hell.
It would be sick as hell. But it's going to be a vision of some sort, which is badass. It's fat ass. We still get that vision. But it does make you wonder if we will see her weapon in a, you know, different style, or I mean, maybe it's not a vision, because that seems like a pretty intricate weapon for just a vision.
There apparently is like Vader breathing. I want to note that doesn't mean anything, obviously, because we heard Vader breathing either in The Force Awakens. I don't know if it was in it, but it was definitely in the trailers when they revealed the helmets. I don't know anything there. The one small note from episode 9 that I do want to say is that apparently John Williams' brother was like, yeah, we've recorded 100 hours or 100 minutes of music, and there's still 40 to go. And I'm like, holy shit, that's 2 hours and 10 minutes. It's not a musical. So like, there's still going to be some time of the movie without music. That seems like a lot of music. So
hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my Jedi gal.
I assume it'll be long, but I was like, that's a lot. I'm not sure. It's like, he's like, I revealed the runtime by accident. I don't know if you did. We will talk more in the sizzle. I know it's going to bump some people out, but I don't want to talk about it twice. I'd rather talk about it when I know what I'm fucking talking about. Because you know some people did a bad – because they didn't play it twice. They played it once, and you know some people did a bad job explaining it. So we'll talk about it. There's a lot to bring up, especially the double-sided lightsaber, all that shit. We'll bring it up when we see it on Monday. And maybe there'll be extra stuff as well. Who knows? But I do – because – and also, I want to talk more about this, and that is The Mandalorian. It's still the number one trending trailer on YouTube. It's the first release trailer, and it's different than the one that was shown at Star Wars Celebration for the Star Wars, the first Star Wars streaming series, The Mandalorian, from Jon Favreau. Features Pedro Pascal, Nick Nolte.
Yeah,
in this movie, he's voicing, I forget the name of the character. It's one of the pig guys from Empire Strikes Back. On
Gamorrean?
Ugnaught.
Yeah.
The little pig guys from Cloud City.
City. I thought you meant the pig guys from
Jabba's Barge.
Yeah, Jabba's Barge.
No, yeah, like if you also, obviously Empire Strikes Back, Cloud City, they have those little like pig looking guys. Nick Nolte is voicing one of them.
The ones that blew up C-3PO, right?
Yeah, well, the Stormtrooper did, but they were there when it happened.
Oh, and they tried to smelt him.
Yeah, yes, they did. Giancarlo Esposito, Carl Weathers, Werner Herzog's in it with killing it with great. His voice. Bill Burr. So I was a little pissed about this. The D23 people got to see Bill Burr shooting a weapon, and this is a different trailer. But Bill Burr is in it. You see the back of his bald head.
Yep.
The Bill Burr talking about how he hated Star Wars as a kid because he didn't see it and didn't understand why people were all into it when he went to school, like the fall after the year the movie was released. Go back and listen to it. Our guy James, Mr. Sunday Movies, talked about it, like how awesome it is. A guy who just fucking said he hated Star Wars in a Star Wars show now. So I'm pumped for that. And then a really big one, Taika Waititi is voicing an IG character. Many people thought he'd be voicing IG-88, and he's not. IG-88, that's probably one of the more well-known bounty hunters that doesn't have a big role in Star Wars. He's in Empire Strikes Back. He's in the Shadows of the Empire video game.
Clone Wars show.
It's not – yeah. It's not IG-88, though. This is the description of the character, which makes it even better. Often get IG-11, and he often gets mistaken for the famous IG-88. So you're going to have this, like, pissed-off Taika Waititi-sounding robot angry that people think he's somebody else. Like, that's even better.
God, it's got to be like an R2 droid, and like you're getting confused. You're like, R2-D2 has been involved in every major conflict in the entirety of like recent history for the last like 250 years.
They have a bunch of other characters, obviously, as well. So the Mandalorian will be Pedro Pascal. No idea. We haven't heard him talk yet. No idea if he'll take his helmet off. I'll read some descriptions from Entertainment Weekly. It's his job, obviously, bounty hunter. Likes to work alone and is rather attached to his stuff. He has a bunch of weapons. He has one on his back. That's actually a reference to the first appearance of Boba Fett in the Christmas special and the holidays.
In the trailer, too, like he was going to use it.
Yeah, very cool. Giancarlo Esposito's character's name is Moff Gideon. The Moffs were sector governors of the First Galactic Empire, but now that the Empire has collapsed, the governors are on their own, and some still have armies at their behest, and this one is rather ambitious. Gina Carano is playing a character named Cara Dunn, fought in the Galactic Civil War under the banner of the Rebellion, former shock trooper. Greef Karga, that's Carl Weathers' character, leader of the Bounty Hunters Guild, asked a Mandalorian to take on an assignment that nobody else wants. And those are the main characters. And obviously, the other main one is IG-11, voiced by Taika Waititi, on a hot streak right now. Very hard to stop him. But this, and then I'll let you guys give some more thoughts. This is set after Return of the Jedi. This is set after Return of the Jedi in the lead up. It's like it's during this like age of where everything is in chaos, right? No one's really ruling anything. The Emperor has fallen. The rebellion won, but it's still hectic. So that this is set between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, which is a really cool time period. And we'll get into the timeline of all this in a minute because we got to talk about two other series as well. But long-winded explanation. Those are all the little nuggets and details. Ken, Jack, what did you think of the trailer?
I thought it was awesome. It's a super gritty style, courtesy of the same cinematography crew that did Rogue One. It looks like it's going to be just more down-to-earth, dirty, less fantastical, which is cool because like that's what we always sort of talk about with Star Wars, right? Is like it's sort of like the classic cinema thing where it's just good versus bad and like it's very set. And this looks like it's more, you know, gray area stuff, which is what we like with Star Wars. And characters look cool. Carl Weathers looked awesome. Just seeing him like his outfit and everything. Just a quick look at him. It looked great. Let me get a look at you, Carl Weathers, or great, whatever. But he looked great. The Werner Herzog thing totally took me by surprise, even though I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere before. And just hearing him talk, I was like, wait a second, that's Werner Herzog. And he just shows up and he's talking. He's a Star Wars guy now. It's fantastic. Ship looked awesome too. I want to note that. Like his ship, like they showed a little snippet of a space battle. Looked awesome. It's no Slave One, but it looked awesome.
I think that I would be shocked if this wasn't most people's second most anticipated Star Wars property.
There are some people saying that they're more excited for this.
Than Return of
Skywalker?
Yeah. Return of the Skywalker, whatever they call it.
The reaction to this seemed universally very, very good.
Yeah. Well, okay. I feel like most people, you know, I understand some people say it. Most people have Episode 9. Then I think you're probably split between Obi-Wan and this. And I just don't think we know enough about Obi-Wan. But I'm going to go out on a limb, make a hot take that this is going to be better than Obi-Wan. Because this is really what we've been asking for in a Star Wars property, where it's you got this great big galaxy, just fucking do some other characters. Yep. And they're doing it. So I enjoy it.
Filoni's on board too, which is awesome because obviously he's responsible for Clone Wars series, and Clone Wars series was fantastic. And I'm just interested in the storyline, just getting learning more about the characters and learning more about the arcs, because I think this could be a really interesting storyline because of kind of what you're saying, Tro, just like it's a huge goddamn universe. Like let's go look at some other stuff. And we're going to get that. We're going to get some Mandalorian lore.
Bryce Dallas Howard is going to be directing an episode. You're going to have one too, right? Yep, Taika Waititi. The first one will be directed by Dave Filoni, who has always kind of been like an understudy of George Lucas, and he did Rebels, he did Clone Wars, he did all that. And this drops, the first one, November 12th, 2019. And this is a big thing. It's a big thing that Disney Plus is doing that differentiates them from Netflix. And I like this a lot. And that is that they're only releasing one episode a week. It's going to be – so they're trying to go for that viral wait-a-week discuss type thing. 10 episodes, $120 million. I like that a lot. Yeah, I want to binge all 10 at once. But you know what? This just creates hype. And this also gets you right to Rise of Skywalker.
Yep. Well, I mean, Hulu does the same thing. And some of the Handmaid's Tale does week-to-week releases. I like it too. It and I guess when it probably comes out, I'll wish selfishly I was able to binge all of them at one time. But from a buzz standpoint, it keeps the week-to-week conversation on this, and everybody's at the same place.
But it's like vegetables or something, though. Like, you know, it's good for you. Like, you want it spread out in like your subconscious because then like you have something more to look forward to. But then at the same time, like, I want to binge it all. I want that.
I think they're just looking out for the recapping community, the recapping blogs and think piece community, because this is good for that. Because going episode to episode, part of the whole watching one episode at a time, like for something like Game of Thrones, was the cycle of, you know, getting excited for it, then watching the episode, then logging on to read everybody's takes about it, then reading the same different takes for the next 4 days, and then getting excited about the next episode.
What are we going to call our Mandalorian recap podcast? Mandastoolian is my pick.
Saturdays are for the Mandalorian.
We will, by the way, I know this. You count these as we're not a TV pod. We will go into the episodes of the Disney Plus series of this one and the things from Marvel as well.
We're Star Wars pod first. People
That's
forget.
True. That's true. We will go into The Mandalorian. When all these shows come out, we will break them down each. Obviously, the Marvel one doesn't come out for a while, so it's just going to be this off the top. But yeah, I think that's all I got on this. I loved it. I thought it was fucking awesome. It just looks like old-fashioned Star Wars. And obviously, everyone knows, we, and especially me, I do love the new ones. But this just has that look to it, that grounded, gross, kind of grimy, like old, late 70s type Star Wars thing. And it's characters who are small time enough where I don't know if they're going to die or live, right? Like, it's a story that isn't going to – where you know what's going to happen in the end. Like, I liked Rogue One, but you knew they were all going to die. So, like, this is so grounded in a point where, like, if they live on and we just never heard from them again, I could believe it. Like, if a bounty hunter just lived on for the rest of these trilogies, left rest of the series, like, oh, I didn't hear from him. Sure, he was small time enough. So I really like that.
Yeah. And I call dibs on the SoundCloud rapper name Young Xandalorian. I didn't listen to a thing Jeff said because I couldn't wait to diarrhea that out of my mouth.
You did look excited to say something.
let me contribute. I do agree with what you're saying. I like the idea that, and I don't know, you know, I think in terms of Star Wars fans on here, I'm probably the least versed of you two guys, and that's fine. The time after the Return of the Jedi and the start of the new sequel trilogy is probably the time that was hit the most by the removal of the expanded universe lore. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see them kind of kick that back up, because we know a lot, like we know a lot about what's going on in the sequel trilogy, but outside of books and all those things I just don't read, we don't know much about that power vacuum that led, or that was there from the fall of the Empire to the rise of the First Order. So any expanding on that they can do, it would be nice if they did that in a very tertiary passive fashion in the show, where they just make references to things and that can be in our imagination.
Yeah, I like where they have it at. Really pumped for it. I think we all kind of knew when it would be set, but now I'd like to see it and hear about it and have people talk about, like, this is during a time of just unrest everywhere. Very intriguing. The two other ones that were talked about, we don't really have any details. The first one we already knew, and that is the untitled Rogue One series, which is going to be set around the time of Star Wars Rebels, obviously before Rogue One, because they all fucking died in Rogue One. But it'll star Cassian Andor, who is played by Diego Luna, and then Alan Tudyk will be back as K2SO, the robot. So they just kind of briefly touched on that. There's nothing really to be seen or really talked about beyond the fact that that show obviously is still happening, and it's going to happen right around when Star Wars Rebels did. And the other one, or I think it's actually, it's like in the middle of Star Wars Rebels. And so we might see some of the Star Wars Rebels characters in live action, which would be pretty cool. The other one they officially confirmed is the Obi-Wan series. The Obi-Wan series will be set actually in between. So there was talk when it would be set. I said at least, I'd love to have seen him in the Clone Wars fighting. That's not when we're getting it. It will be before, it'll be in between Revenge of the Sith and the original Star Wars movie, but it's a little after Revenge of the Sith. So it's what Obi-Wan got into when he went into hiding, when he gave up Luke and he went into hiding. So it'll also be before Star Wars Rebels, if we did see Obi-Wan in Star Wars Rebels late in that series. But this is going to be set actually in between the beginning of Solo and the end of Solo. So right around that time period, right after Revenge of the Sith, which is, I said it, I'm less excited knowing that than I would have been if it was during the Clone Wars. But regardless, like on the surface, still going to be cool to see you and McGregor come back.
Yeah, that's cool. I want to see more about, like, I would say just the general story they're going to go into, just because what we know is that he was on Tatooine for most of that time period. So I don't know. I hope he gets to go some planets that we haven't seen, because again, me and Troll share that thought of just wanting to see more of the universe. And I just hope we're not stuck in that fucking trash desert planet for like whatever, however many episodes.
Which, by the way, that's the Mandalorian is set on Tatooine, which is kind of funny, but
which is trash considering Mandalore is one of the coolest planets in Star Wars canon. In Clone Wars, it was sick as hell, and they just won't go there. Keep showing this trash fucking desert. No one wants to go there.
That's my only knockout. I was like, oh, come on, really?
That was one of my favorite parts in when they did The Force Awakens. It's like, yeah, we're not on Tatooine anymore. We're on, like, Jakku, which is the same thing, just with a different name. Like, fuck, man. No one wants to be on a desert planet. Why would anyone even live here?
It would be awesome if, like, Obi-Wan lands on Tatooine to just camp out there, and he needs furniture, and he goes to the Jawa Sandcrawler, and it's basically just an IKEA. Yeah, right. He just walks through the whole sand crawler, and they have setups and stuff like that. And he goes to the end and just gets what he wants.
What's the Jawa version of Swedish meatballs? What are they?
Houdini. That noise is like in my mind with how many Jawas I've murdered in video games.
Yeah, they always just run around in the middle of Battlefront. Like, what are you supposed to do? Not kill them?
And when they get killed in Star Wars The New Hope, they just turn into nothing because all their robes are flat on the ground on the dirt.
Yeah,
what's the deal with that? Are they energy beings? Are they
Lucas used all the fucking budget and they only had room for the robes, nothing to put inside them.
Maybe they're force users and they just become one with the force.
Well, like there's really no definitive what do Jawas look like without their robes, but it's been rumored that they look like rats, like rat people. So.
Yeah. Like womp rats?
Essentially. Like grown.
More like Splinter.
Yeah, kind of gross. All right, that's kind of it on Star Wars. We'll dive into episode 9 in the middle of the week. I've said it 3 times, but I don't want to be too redundant. I'd rather us comment on something we've actually fucking seen before. Moving on to Marvel, the second biggest part of D23. And they talked about a ton of shit. We'll dive into some of the stuff we have more details on. Example that we don't have a lot of details on, Black Panther 2 coming out May 6, 2022. We knew it was coming out, not next year or the year after. It looks like it's going to be Phase 5. Captain Marvel will have a sequel then, Blade. So confirmation, Ryan Coogler back, Black Panther 2. Great. Next up, Disney Plus with Marvel, though. They added 3 new shows. How about that? Didn't even talk about them. Didn't even talk about them at Comic-Con. I keep mixing every one of those up. So the first one they announced was Ms. Marvel, which that had been rumored to be on the Disney Plus streaming platform. The second is Moon Knight. And the third, surprise a lot of people, She-Hulk. So 3 new live-action, big-time MCU Phase 4 shows. Which one of these stuck out to you the most?
Nothing in particular. I don't know anything about any of them, so it's kind of tough to give like a barometer moving moment, I would say. She-Hulk, I know, has been like a big character in Marvel lore since like the 80s. So, I mean, it's good to see, her get a little bit of shine with Marvel. But so, yeah, I guess that She-Hulk would be number one. I don't know shit all about Moon Knight. I thought it was Meta Knight from, Super Smash Bros.
Moon Knight's a wisecracking fellow, is he not?
I don't know anything about him.
That's what I'm so intrigued about these three. I don't know much about any of them, and that's what I like. They are going to, you know, I'm excited for WandaVision. I'm excited for Loki, all these, but let's introduce some new characters here.
I looked up Moon Knight, and I saw some comic panels of Moon Knight. He looks like he swears a lot.
Moon Knight is often compared to DC's Batman, but he is different as the various characters were resurrected by Egyptian lunar god of vengeance and justice, etc., etc. The character's powers include psychic resistance, with most telepathic or mental attacks not that effective, a high degree of pain tolerance, in addition to hand-to-hand combat and weapons training. So that's a very complex hero.
Classic Egyptian god, Moon Knight.
That's all I got on that one. But I do know what I can base a lot of it off of is that people who are fans of Marvel Comics were kind of shocked that they announced a Moon Knight series. She-Hulk, I don't know a ton about either. I just know it's just the female version of Hulk. I don't know how they're going to tie that in. And the same with Ms. Marvel. But I know Ms. Marvel is going to be a younger character. It would be more of like a child, teenager type character introduced into the MCU. And I know that one is a pretty big deal because it'll be the first time there's a Muslim hero in the MCU. So Muslim female superhero. So that's a big deal for all three of those, and people seem pumped. So you know what? I like going a different route. You got to add more characters. We talk about those Star Wars all the time. They get too ingrained with the same people, and we mentioned it. Kevin Feige and Marvel, they're like, fuck it, we're going to get weird now. And they're just going to get weird. The next thing on the list here, The Eternals. The Eternals was probably the movie that got the most play. They showed the concept art for all of the people in the cast. Let me remind you, who's in The Eternals, Angelina Jolie as Thena, Richard Madden as Icarus, who he looked probably the most badass in that concept art. Him in his cool blue suit. Kumail Nanjiani as Kingo, and Kumail is looking fucking jacked.
Yeah, he's
yoked.
On the John Boyega workout plan, because John Boyega was looking yoked as well.
Yeah. Everyone in this movie is starting to look. Brian Tyree Henry, another one. He's playing Fastos. Lauren Ridloff, Makari. Selma Hayek as Ajak. Liam McHugh as Sprite. Don Lee as Gilgamesh. Barry, how do you say his name? Is it Barry Keoghan? I just know he's the guy who dies in Dunkirk.
Yeah, don't ask me for pronunciation tips.
He plays a character named Druig, and then the two additions that are official, and these are the two main characters, apparently. Gemma Chan, who was just in Captain Marvel, and they didn't give her a great role, so they just are having her do something else with a better role. She's playing Cersei, so one of the two main characters. And the other main character, who is not an Eternal, is Kit Harington, and he will be playing Dane Whitman, also known as the Black Knight. So once again, Kit Harington will be having a sword in his next thing. He will be carrying a sword around in this movie.
How do you not cast Martin Lawrence for continuity's sake? What a great movie that was.
But the Kit Harington thing, I'm very intrigued by. And notice I didn't say excited. I said intrigued because I have no idea if that'll be any good. I do not find Kit Harington to be a fantastic actor. I think he did a really good job with Jon Snow. But it's just kind of a wait and see. Like, huh, will this play out? Especially if he's the main character.
When they announced Kit Harington was going to be, so it came out and the announcement was Kit Harington's going to be in Marvel somewhere. Yeah. And so your mind, we always like want to go to the most incredible thing we can think of. And so my mind immediately went to Wolverine.
I'm happy he's not Wolverine, to be completely honest.
I don't know if he's a good enough actor to be Wolverine.
It's not even just that he's not good enough. He's just like, Wolverine's such a distinct character, especially with like now what we know with like Hugh Jackman. And so it's really hard to like push that off. Like, is he just like he's like a timid looking face. Like, you need to be a very, very like sort of,
I don't know.
You live up that aura, that like machismo, whatever. And I just don't think he has that. He's not like scary. You don't look at his face and think like, this guy can fucking slash me apart at any second. You look at his face and be like, did his girlfriend just break up with him? He looks really sad all the time and very scared.
Wolverine was sad, dude. Wolverine was sad all the time.
Yeah, but not like in a cool, somber, like Cyclops, you know, stoic sadness. He looks like he like didn't get enough likes on his Instagram. Or like something like that. Like that.
I think Kit Harington would look really good as Wolverine. Plus Wolverine's shorter and Kit Harington is a shorter man. That being said, I'm not the tallest man, so I'm not disparaging Kit Harington. Let me take that back. I thought Kit Harington, the best Kit Harington thing I've ever seen was 7 Days in Hell. And I thought he was very fantastic in that. But he also played just the character wasn't there. So I don't know how much of that was him or just how much was just the way it was filmed and the writing. But I'm intrigued like you are, Jeff, because they're putting him in a role that I don't think will get too much criticism if people don't like it all that much. But I still think he can do a good job with it. I just don't know. I don't know what his acting abilities are.
I think it's weird because he actually played the villain, like he did mocap to play the main villain in one of the Call of Duty games. And I thought he was really good in it. Like he was really good as a villain, but it was like such a specific sort of villain, like that played to his sort of strengths as an actor. I don't think Wolverine lends to that. But as far as that'll work with Black Knight, I have no idea because I know nothing about Black Knight. So I guess it's one of those things we just have to wait and see, but just hope that they kind of find a way to, you know, fit that character into his strengths, because I think, like most people, I just don't know much about the character.
Cool looking character, though. I'll say that much. Black Knight is a cool looking character. The X-Men stuff, in terms of Wolverine and all those characters, it sounds like we may not even hear about that till the end of next year. That won't even happen until 2022 and beyond, which makes sense. Don't rush it. Like, I know, like we catch ourselves saying that on some things, but like the examples are there. The proof is in the pudding. Don't rush this shit. Make it right. There's no reason to. They have a lot of stuff coming out. The D23 stuff, or excuse me, the Disney Plus stuff. Going to get these episodes one week at a time. So you're going to have Marvel stuff stretched out even more over the year rather than just like two or three movies. Other things in terms of Marvel movies. Marvel gave a new look at Black Widow. We got a poster today. And the poster, you see a couple like Florence Pugh is in this. But the one that's notable is that you see David Harbour as Red Guardian. And he looks cool as shit.
That's cool as a mask. It looks kind of similar to the Captain America one from like the first Avenger.
I feel like he's probably going to die, but he looks cool.
Cool ass beard. I like bearded superheroes.
The problem with the prequels like this is that like if he lives, where was he during the Avengers? Right? Like you just like it's hard to make characters like this stay alive.
Well, is Red Guardian going to be a bad guy?
No, I believe Taskmaster is the bad guy.
Well, and I guess that's the wrong way of putting it. So Black Widow is essentially like a Soviet agent, right? Or like a Russian agent, right? So she's gonna be working for like quote unquote the bad guys, and then like Red Guardian, same thing. Like not necessarily on the good guys team, because this even Black Widow used to say that she's like
This movie is set right after Civil War.
No, oh, okay, so maybe not. He's Putin's lackey or something. Who knows?
But what if the lines were blurred, Ken Jack?
Ooh.
Something tells me the lines will be blurred in this. David Harbour's just a cool looking dude.
Yeah, he looks cool in this.
He looked cool in Hellboy. The movie wasn't good, but he looked good as it. And he looks good as the Red Guardian. I'm excited by it. I thought this poster was very well done. I like posters that look like they're illustrated.
Yeah, it's a cool style. It's a neat poster. But check it out. You can see David Harbour's character there. We're cutting back and forth. Oh, here we go. We'll go with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier next. Two casting things announced there. One, Bucky Barnes cut his hair, by the way. You can see the poster. People, oh, man. The Bucky Barnes stands are very sad right now on the LCV mentions.
His hair was at an all-time high. Yeah. Like, it could not have been looking better in Infinity War and Endgame, and then they just cut it. That's fucked.
Yeah, that's so tough.
Oily and gross in Civil War, and like, yeah, sure, cut it then, because it looks nasty. But like, it was luxurious. It was looked like he was being pampered, and like, you know, had a regimen going, and then they just fuck it and just like cut it.
However,
he's using Aveda.
Yeah,
care of it.
Let's be fair to Bucky Barnes, though. He was brainwashed and used it as an assassin for decades, and then he had it stripped away from him, and then had it brought back into him during Civil War. So he went through that tug of war. Then he was on the run. And then he was put on ice. And then he woke up for like, what, a year in Wakanda? Not even, maybe?
He had to be a farmer.
Then he was thrown right into battle, and then he was dusted. So he like finally has a chance to sit down and like take a shower and get a haircut. I guess I don't blame Bucky all that much.
He's just trying to do like a re-imaging, like, hey, it's me. Like, I didn't do all those political assassinations that shaped the 20th century. I'm a different guy. I'm not Bucky Barnes. I'm the Winter Soldier. And everyone's like, nah, we remember. We remember you. You killed JFK. We didn't forget that.
He killed Tony Stark's dad. Sharon Carter is also back. She will be returning. Emily Van Camp will be returning as Sharon Carter. Don't forget that Kat made out with her and then went back in time and married her aunt. That's weird.
Fucked.
Really fucked up. And then in another movie, WandaVision, we'll talk about WandaVision now. Kat Dennings is returning as Darcy. She was in the Thor series. Randall Park, Kendrick's favorite Marvel character. And then Randall Park is returning as Jimmy Woo, who we saw in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And then Katherine Hahn will be having a character as well. And this movie is being described as a half classic sitcom, half MCU spectacular. And we are being told that you should mash up the Dick Van Dyke Show in a Marvel epic for this. I know, Kendrick, you're not on board. I mean, this is the most intriguing news to come from D23.
It's not a movie, it's a series, right?
Series, correct, yes.
Yeah, just not interested. Is anyone like really pining for either of these two?
I wasn't until I heard it was going to be like the Dick Van Dyke Show. And the poster they released looks fucking ridiculous.
But like Vision and Wanda both were like two of the most powerful characters in the MCU, and they just kind of stunk.
So I think Vision stinks, but I did like Wanda. They just did kind of she got shoehorned in, and they had to kind of like compress her powers, and I think we may be seeing the undoing of that, right? Like they may be kind of changing that up a little bit. So, like, I'm into that if that's what they do. But I like, again, I like the weird shit. I like that there. I mean, this may stink. This definitely has the one that could potentially stink the most. This could be a big steaming pile of shit if it doesn't work out. But I like that they're going in a direction that is at least something unique. I don't just want Marvel fucking shows. I don't want, you know what I don't want? I don't want a bunch of Netflix shows. I really don't. I don't want a bunch of shows that are like the Netflix Defenders series. Like, nobody wants that.
Poor production value and just poor script writing in general.
I feel like it's just so weird that I have no other choice but to trust it.
What do you mean? Like, as an alternative to what?
This just feels like one of those things I'll shit on for 8 months and it'll end up being good. And then I have to come on the podcast and be all apologetic about shitting on it. And so I'm going to take the opposite approach and not shit on it, even though it looks different. But I feel like if it's gotten this far with this vibe, there's something about it that the masterminds at the MCU collective are still allowing it to go on. It's got to be good.
Well, I don't think we're shitting on it necessarily as saying, like, why is this necessary? I think it's like a little bit of a difference there. We did the same sort of hedging with Toy Story 4, where we're like, I don't think necessarily anyone's asking for it. And then it turned out to be okay. And we're like, okay.
I don't think anyone's asking for the Vision side of things, but I think the Wanda thing is what gets me interested, though, because they do need to make Wanda a bigger character. Way too cool of a superhero. Like, way too much going on here. So why not bring her into this universe with more than just kind of what she was, and that was a dumbed-down version of her comic book character. And this obviously does tie into Doctor Strange in the multiverse. So I do agree. On the Vision side, I don't think anyone wanted to. I mean, Vision was dead. Like, big dead.
Big dead.
It's like, just nobody even gave a fuck about bringing him back. No one said a word about Viz.
He's a robot, you know.
Like, could you even bring him back to life? Because he's actually not a life. He's a robot.
Yeah, if they really wanted to bring him back to life, that's something that they don't talk about. If they really liked the guy and wanted to bring him back to life, I think what we've seen in what we've seen in the Spider-Man sequel is that the technology's still there and they could do it. But they're kind of just like, you know, he's kind of an asshole. We just had brunch and he wore a collared shirt and a sweater, made the rest of us look like shit. We just don't really want him running around with us anymore.
It's a bad crew. I think the fact that Hulk couldn't even remember to bring him back is a good testament to how much people cared about Vision.
That's true. Like, Hulk, you want to bring Viz back? And he was in space during Civil War. He was like, who? I don't care. Oh, that guy from Ultron? I didn't fucking remember that guy. I knew him for 10 minutes. That's right. Hulk knew him for 10 minutes, essentially.
He was more interested. But Hulk also made him, too, I guess, to be fair. But
that's even worse. He made him, doesn't even give a shit.
Yeah. But they were more interested in bringing back the old Soviet agent with no superpowers.
And the other one is U.S. agent. I almost said Soviet. It's U.S. agent. That'll be played by Wyatt Russell, son of Kurt Russell. He was in 22 Jump Street and many other things, but that's the one I remember him most from. He also goes to the Acebo place near my apartment, but he'll be in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier as the U.S. agent. And U.S. agent is described, his name is John Walker, as the U.S. government's next choice for Captain America, but he ultimately suffered a mental breakdown and went rogue until Steve Rogers took the shield back. So a little different than the comics, but it sounds like he will be up against the Falcon and the Winter Soldier and pissed off that Sam Wilson got the shield, essentially, which is kind of cool. I like that element of a villain.
Could have been Cap. God damn it.
Swear to God, dude, if I didn't tear my ACL senior year, could have been Cap. Swear to fucking God. I wonder what other names they floated for WandaVision. Like, do you think they had any other? I know I'm a little off topic. It was off topic at this point, but I'm just curious because I think WandaVision is a lazy name.
I think I can see them having gone through 40,000 names and been like, look, just combine the two names together.
Look, long division. What do you think, guys? No. No. Let's do one division. Okay. How about television? No. We're doing one division.
Maximoff Vision?
You're fired.
Julie Headman.
Pockets. I just want to know if there's going to be a live studio audience with this. If it's like a true sitcom, like a Seinfeld or Friends sitcom. Some laughter.
WandaVision's filmed in front of a live studio audience.
I should do my sweaters again. That's my Bernie Sanders version of Brad Garrett.
So many heroes in the world today. You need a friend in a big way. WandaVision. The cheesy Miller boy at production.
Other things, Kate Herron will be directing some of the Loki series, and then they showed a little bit of the What If. You see Peggy Carter as Captain Britain. There's a zombie Captain America, so that stuff will be coming out. But we'll move on from Marvel. I do want to note, though, that Tom Holland spoke about Spider-Man. His mindset is that it's not happening anymore. He told the crowd, "I love you 3000. That's very sad. Said that Spider-Man 3 will not be part of the MCU. They've already talked about it. And then Kevin Feige, which I don't believe this at all. I'm not calling you a liar, Kevin Feige, but I think you lied here. He said, "I'm feeling about Spider-Man gratitude and joy. We got to make 5 films within the MCU with Spider-Man, 2 standalone films, and 3 with the Avengers. It was a dream that I never thought would happen. It was never meant to last forever. We knew there was a finite amount of time that we'd be able to do this, and we told the story we wanted to tell, and I'll always be thankful for that." That's bullshit. That's bullshit. No chance he didn't expect this to keep happening. Like, that's crazy. Like, you don't help produce a movie where he becomes the next fucking Tony Stark and just go, "Oh yeah, I knew we were gonna not be able to use him anymore at some point." That's insane. I don't believe that for one bit.
They're literally passing the mantle from, like, the leader of the Avengers to Spider-Man. They're like, "Yeah, we planned for this. We're gonna get him back. Definitely not."
Come on, Kevin, you and your
talk about Kevin.
Kevin. Call him the Kevin man.
Lizzie.
That's Marvel. So let's move on. Other D23 things. We're gonna put the foot on the gas a little more here. We don't have to spend too much time in some of these. Frozen 2. Let me note, I still don't care that much about this, but Frozen 2, Evan Rachel Wood is going to be playing Elsa's mother, and Sterling K. Brown joins the cast. Okay. This one, 3 years after the events of the first film, Elsa starts to hear a strange sound from the north calling her. Together with her sister Anna, Kristoff, Olaf, and Sven, they embark on a new journey beyond their homeland of Arendelle in order to discover the origin of Elsa's magic powers and save their kingdom. I like him, Rachel Wood, Sterling K. Brown, great actor, that's cool. I still can't tell you I care much about this, though. So
I don't. I can tell you I don't care much.
This is coming out in like 2 months. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're creating Frozen 2 to erase all the references to Walt Disney being Frozen 2.
Or just to erase the people's memories of Olaf's Frozen Adventure.
Or it's Frozen 2 and they're going to like SEO it to erase the conspiracy theories about Frozen 1 being created to erase the search history for Disney Frozen.
Yep, that's right. I love that conspiracy.
Yeah, Frozen is the modern Disney animated musical for babies, unlike Moana, which is the modern Disney animated musical for gentlemen and big thought leaders like ourselves.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Who have big muscles and lots of tattoos.
Another movie that was talked about, this is announced, this is from Disney Animation Studios, which is nice seeing them do some different, unique, original projects, called Raya and the Last Dragon. Premise, in a land called Kumandra, split into 5 different regions, a warrior named Raya searches for the last dragon in the world. This is going to be coming out November 20th.
I'm the last dragon, I'm over here. Hey, come on, I'm over here.
The dragon will be actually be voiced by Awkwafina, so it'll sound a little different than that. Just a slight touch. November 2020, and then Cassie Steele will be playing Rhea. She was in Degrassi, The Next Generation. That's what it says she's most known for.
Remember Drake?
Yeah.
Oh, I love the Drake Degrassi memes.
Yes.
So Ray and the Last Dragon, that's an original from Pixar coming out next year in March, and that's Onward. We've talked about Onward, starring Tom Holland, Chris Pratt, and Julie Louis-Dreyfus, also Octavia Spencer. We finally have a full synopsis for it. The film is set in a magical world populated with elves, trolls, mermaids, centaurs, gnomes, sprites, goblins, and all their mystical creatures. This world, however, where fairy tale was once the reality, is losing its sense of magic. Its inhabitants use Machines such as mobile phones and cars instead of magic. Two teenage elf brothers, Ian and Barely Lightfoot, embark on a quest to discover if there is still magic in the world in order to spend one day with their father, who died when they were too young to remember him. Once again, it's a lost parent driving a Pixar movie, so I'm sure there'll be fucking tears here somewhere. But that is the premise. It's about them finding the magic, which does sound cool. It sounds like they're getting some good fun hijinks there.
100% crying during this movie. Calling my shot right now.
Obvious cry. Just, cool. I mean, it's big. They're even telling you, you're going to cry. Find out when it happens.
Yeah, it's not really a matter of if, it's just when. I'm going to say first cry moment is probably within the opening 8 minutes. Like, you're going to get some sort of story about their dad. It's going to be rough. I can't wait. Tom Holland and Chris Pratt are both, I think, very soft-spoken and good voices as well. So I'm excited for this.
Playing up these 80s things, though, Trill. Nostalgia playing right into your heart.
That's what they're doing. I mean, that's the play, man. That's the play. You got to get me to take my kid to it.
I think you probably will. Will you? When are you going to take your kid to the first movie?
I don't know. I don't know what the age is. I can tell you right now, she would not sit through a movie. At all. And I know this because I tried, we tried taking her to Lion King, and it just, we got about 7 minutes in, and we were like, nope, this isn't going to work.
So Onward comes out in March. Oh boy. Here's a full trailer for something coming to Disney streaming in November. And that is Lady and the Tramp. They released the Lady and the Tramp trailer. It's like Lady and the Tramp, the cartoon, but it's live action.
Whoa.
This one.
Damn.
This one, no.
Really?
No.
That's okay.
I got nothing for this. Most like Lion King, fine, right? Like, I like the Lion King. Lady and the Tramp, I don't even like the regular movie, the original.
Yeah, I mean, the original had its own charm. But really what it comes down to is the damn spaghetti scene.
They show it at the end.
Yeah.
They show the spaghetti. They're going to eat spaghetti at the end.
I've seen it, though. Right? Like, we know it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know.
So saying that, like, it comes down to what then? Like, what, like...
That's what I'm saying, is just give me the clip of the spaghetti scene on YouTube and we can review the movie. It'll be a 45-minute discussion on the spaghetti scene.
I'd rather do that. And we could do it live from Buca di Beppo. Sponsorship opportunity.
Oh, yeah. I want the Pope table.
Sit underneath that Pope, talk about some animatronic dogs smooching it up.
Animatronic dogs? No, sir. These are real dogs, my friend.
Well, not real dogs. Definitely CGI, right?
Well, I mean, they're real dogs that are like CGI'd in various aspects, right? Like, because they had the dogs on the red carpet.
Yeah, the dogs were rescue dogs.
The dogs were there. They look cute. Cool. They're cute looking dogs.
I'll tell you what I don't give a fuck about, though, is this. This is an old boomer cartoon. Haven't watched them since I was a kid. You know. The kissing scene, and that's all you need to know from this. I don't think anyone else wants to talk about dogs fucking. I'm done with it.
Boomer cartoon.
I mean, what's funny about that? It is.
Yeah.
It's a boom. I mean, that's not why I hate it, but it's a boomer cartoon.
It was probably like X-rated in 1945 or whatever it came out.
That fucking spaghetti scene, people boycotted the movie.
Oh, for sure. Like Texas, like try to like get the movie theater burned down in 1945.
Texas wasn't even a state when this movie came out.
Lady and the Tramp has always been a tier B Disney production, even when I was a kid, and I was very much aware that Lady and the Tramp was existing. It was something that I never requested my parents to add to our collection of gigantic clamshell VHS cases.
Oh man, I miss those clamshells.
Oh, those Disney cases, those hit different.
Yep.
They did. Oh. That and McDonald's Sprite, they just hit different. By the way, speaking of food, we're definitely going to have a chicken sandwiches ranking coming up soon. Have to do it. Too much D23 today to fit it in. But
yeah, we got to strike while the iron's hot in this whole chicken sandwich discussion.
I need to eat more. I think I've only had 3 fast food chicken sandwiches before.
The most viral chicken sandwich of all. The most viral food item ever. It's unbelievable.
I don't usually get chicken sandwiches. I know I think it's a bigger thing than South, but like I think I only would get like burgers here. Like I got it from Chick-fil-A. I got it from Burger King, and I got it from Popeyes. Those are the only places I've ever had chicken sandwiches.
You've never had a Wendy's chicken sandwich?
No, I get their nuggets all the time. I've never gotten their chicken sandwich before.
Very good. It's very good. It's not Popeyes, though. Also, by the way, if you go and find the WandaVision poster and you expand it out, it appears as though that her character casts a shadow on a wall, and it looks like that Wanda will be wearing her comic book accurate costume in the movie, which includes like that headpiece and all that mess. So that's cool. That's cool. Again, that's the half that I'm into. It's the other stuff, I don't really care. Okay, so Lady and the Tramp. The hype, I don't even know. I can't even say it's there. I don't even think there is hype there. And it's
going straight to stream, right?
Though I will say that's like Disney's definitely trying to buck that stigma because like they're going to put stuff on here that is good.
They would have released that in theaters if they thought it was good, presumably.
I could see both sides. I could see both sides of it. But on the other hand, maybe they just think that it is good and that's how they want to kick off their platform. Regardless, I don't care. Sorry. That's not the thing I'm going to be jumping on first.
When do you think the live action Bambi's going to come out?
Oh, jeez.
Because that's another one I won't give a shit about.
Yeah, if that's that Fox and the Hound, they'll all come out eventually.
Fox and the Hound might be a little bit more. I'd be a little bit more into Fox and the Hound, but Bambi, you can get fucked, in my opinion.
Next up on the Disney Plus docket, we're cutting through these as fast as we can. Noelle. It's a new Christmas movie. We're going to get two traditional Christmas movies this year.
Oh, yeah.
I'm watching this before I watch Lady and the Tramp. This drops on November 12th as well.
I thought you were about the Henry Golding one.
This is not a joke either.
No, this is Noelle with Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader. As Santa prepares to retire and pass on the reins to his son, Nick Claus, the stress of his future role begins to get to Nick. When his sister, Noelle, played by Anna Kendrick, suggests that he take a weekend off, Nick abandons his job completely. Noelle faces the world outside the North Pole for the first time when she follows him to try to convince him to return to work. Meanwhile, their ill-prepared cousin steps up and prepares to turn Santa's workshop into an online delivery service. Played by Billy Eichner, Gabrielle Kringle.
I love it.
This looks corny as fuck, but it looks like a lot of fun, much like that of the Amelia Clark and Henry Golding one.
Yeah, but this is way different. This is almost like a spiritual successor to Elf.
Yeah, this is. It's a
huge Elf vibes in this.
Huge Elf vibes. I love it.
And not in a ripoff way, and not really even in a homage way, just like stylistically, just very, very similar. And I'm into that. Big into that. Love this cast quite a bit.
I'm Elf something also I'm shocked that they haven't tried to do a sequel on.
Yes.
About
capitalizing on nostalgia. But yeah, I'm excited about this because I love the Hater Man. I'll take the Hater Man in whatever doses I can get. And someone's going to be on streaming. And also Anna Kendrick's awesome too.
But I feel like I wish it was dropping in December, but you got to drop your platform with big names. I would like to wait till Christmas to watch, but maybe I'm just going to watch it then and then rewatch during Christmas time. But I'm excited for this one.
And all these Christmas movies come out in November. So there's obviously some market research done showing that you have to release these in November to get the full maximum impact of people watching them over the holiday season. Max Christmas.
Max Christmas would be a cool character name. My name is Max Christmas. He's voiced by Diedrich Bader for some reason.
Two Christmases at the same time.
Cycle on through. Next up, Cruella. That's right, the live-action prequel to 101 Dalmatians. Emma Stone, we got our first look at her, and it does have the steampunk vibe that was teased. The punk rock vibe. Not steampunk, punk rock. Steampunk Cruella.
Punk Cruella would be funny, though.
Yeah, but it has a very punk rock vibe to it. This is a very Trill Ballins-looking-ass movie.
Emma Stone fucking slays in this promo shot. Looks awesome.
She does look great. Looks very, I don't know what the right word is, stylized, I guess. I'm a fan of Emma Stone. I don't really give a shit about Cruella or 101 Dalmatians. That's another one I just had never really connected with me too much. But are we into it now? Because I stand my queen.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Another one I'm not way into. I can't say I'm pumped for it. She does look cool, though, and I like that they're kind of going a different route. At least they're going a different route than live-action ones. Like doing something that changes it up a bit, where they're taking a classic character and making something a bit unique. So like for that reason, props. I respect that. Like I look forward to that angle. But in terms of the characters as a whole, that just doesn't do much.
Refresh me. Is this a streaming movie only, or is this a movie?
This is a movie. This comes out May 2021. It was actually supposed to come out next year. It's not. It's been delayed.
Okay. No, now it's too far away for me to care about.
Okay, there you go. Never mind then.
If you get a promo shot like that out, it shouldn't take that long to film this movie, right? They should be able to film this in 3 weeks.
So what's going to be like the kind of plot for this?
I don't know.
About that? Is she going to be framed in a good light? Is Cruella good now?
I think maybe we see her downfall, perhaps, to see
from her side,
how she got so cruel and evil.
Mm.
How she got that the big long cigarette holder thing. What are those called? Is there a name for those? Cigarette holder?
I think it is literally just a cigarette holder, but they look cool as shit.
They do. Smoking is sick. Smoking's sick.
Smoking is so damn cool.
Maybe her name was just like Stacy Gray or something like that at first, and then
Jenny Smith.
We see her just trying to like pick out two like words, like cruel and evil, to come up with her new name. And then nobody else fucking notices that her name is Cruel Devil. And everyone just works for her and trusts her. It's really fucked up when you think about it.
It is. We're in a society, for fuck's sake.
And the last one. This is it. Boy, this is Disney. Thank God they pay us, folks. The Jungle Cruise with The Rock, also known as DJ Dwayne Johnson, and Emily Blunt. They kind of revealed details for the first time. There has to be a trailer soon. They showed footage at D23, but this is the description. The Rock came out on stage at D23 to introduce the first two trailers. The first one began in the Amazon jungle in Brazil. Johnson's character is shown telling passengers on his riverboat, "Every time, everything you see wants to kill you and can." Very Disney. The scene is a recreation of Disney's Ride, except set in the early 20th century, and I would hope it's actual animals. Johnson's character is basically a swindler who fakes a jungle experience for people. He's essentially Elizabeth Holmes. However, when Blunt recruits him to go up the river,
does he talk with like a really high pitched voice?
Oh, like
over here we have.
No, he goes the opposite way. It's like,
welcome to my jungle cruise.
Trying to rather than just this
regular guy voice,
mount of a man.
Over here, you'll see the spotted leopard. However, when Emily Blunt's character recruits him to go upriver, he ends up battling some real and clearly supernatural threats. After that, Blunt joined Johnson on stage and revealed a second trailer. I don't know why I just make just one trailer that plays out from her character's perspective instead. Oh, that's why. Look at that. Answer the question at the end of the fucking sentence. What an asshole. This trailer began in London as Blunt scientists talked about a tree with unparalleled healing powers located deep in the Amazon jungle. So again, this is no different than the Haunted Mansion movie or Parts of the Caribbean. It's a movie based on a ride.
We call it the CBD tree.
This is something that I need to see a fucking trailer to care an ounce about. I don't like this ride. It's a boring ass ride. This is a boomer's ride right here, Ken Jack. I know you haven't been to Disney. This is a ride that the hippo that would open its mouth blew people's minds when Disney first opened. Now I got nothing with this one.
Folks talking about me doing a food review. A hippo opening its mouth. That was the segue I made there.
I don't like that. I didn't like that. That kind of made me mad that you just said that.
Folks. Let me tell you about it.
I like this only because I enjoy both Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt. And aside from that, I just hate the concept. I don't like the concept.
Yeah, I'll be blunt. I don't care about it.
Fuck you.
This movie isn't.
Sounds like it rocks, though.
Fuck you.
Damn it.
Sorry, Troll. Are you stroking your Johnson to get one off on that? I don't think there's a pun for Emily, so you could try.
Well, you already took Blunt.
No, I just mean the name Emily. I don't know if there's a pun with the actual word.
I would be Emma lying to you if I said I was excited about this movie.
Gross.
What can you say except you're welcome, Jeff? Those are good puns.
Hey. Jim Face from The Office.
uh, Okay, that's it. We're done. We're done with D23.
Okay, good. Drake clapping gif.
Do you know what they did not talk about at D23, though?
Bin Laden.
Little Nicky.
New Mutants. Not a word.
All three of us are right there.
Not a. They may have talked more about Little Nicky than they did talk about New Mutants. Just say you're not releasing it. Holy shit. Just say we're never. Actually, you know what? Fuck that. I like that. I like it. I hope they just never talk about it. They never open their mouths again about it ever. And it just sits there for years.
I heard Buddy Pounds was at D23.
Uh-oh. We're going to get a report on to the midweek episode.
Hey, guys.
Uh-oh. Okay. The Barstool Store, one of the sponsors here. We got a ton of summer merch still in the store that works for all seasons. Getting ready for some football stuff, too. Might be some new football stuff coming. I don't know. Jeep accessories, bathing suits, towels, pool floats, so much more. Come on. Hammer it out before Labor Day. You got to get all that. You got to steal like one last swim before fall. So get ready to go. A huge collection of limited edition Barstool USA tees as well. Go to store.barstoolsports.com to shop now. We're not done with news, folks. One more big thing, and that is the Breaking Bad movie. First trailer released, Breaking Bad movie called El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. Comes out October 11th, 2019. Jesse Pinkman pursues freedom after escaping his captors. The only person in the trailer, it's a teaser, it's not a full trailer, is Skinny Pete, played by Charles Baker. He talks about how he's not going to tell authorities where Jesse Pinkman is. So it's a movie about finding Jesse Pinkman. You know what? First of all, excited for this, but you know what else this does? This gets me right into the mood to watch Breaking Bad all over again.
The one thing I was kind of scared of with this was that they might kind of not ruin the show, but like leave it off on a sour note. But I think my now sort of recent example for this is Deadwood, because Deadwood, I think, ended at the right time, the show, and then they made a movie for it, and I was afraid the movie was going to be bad, but the movie was great. So I don't know. I'm very excited for this to actually be good, and just in addition to the lore of the Breaking Bad universe, because Better Call Saul, also very good.
Yeah, I think I'm not worried about it ruining Breaking Bad. You'd have to do something with Walt in order for it to do that. But I think the Jesse Pinkman character wouldn't be able to do that. Is Vince Gilligan writing and directing it?
So, yeah, that's part of why I just assume this is going to be great, because Vince Gilligan is the one that did this.
See, I trust, that's his baby, so I trust him with it. And I mean, unless he just got paid an exorbitant amount of money, which I'm sure he did anyway, I think he would be able to make a competent movie out of this.
Yeah, there's just no way he is going to make something bad, I feel like. I have complete confidence that this will be great. He directed it, produced it, wrote it. I mean, this is it's his baby extended. Very excited for this. We don't have too much to talk about on it, but we will definitely be reviewing this movie on the pod. Comes out October 11th. I'm going to pull up what we're actually reviewing that week. We got to add to the schedule. We will definitely be reviewing the Breaking Bad movie on here, so get ready for that. However, the tacked on story to this, we'll be reviewing this with Gemini Man. Huh.
Gemini.
How about that? Gemini Man taking a bit of a back seat that episode.
They made meth out of more meth.
So El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, which I tweeted out calling it a Breaking Bad story. Star Wars had that ingrained in me. But Aaron Paul was not very happy on Twitter when this trailer came out. So you remember when he released the Mezcal thing and people got pissed off at him? He went on a bit of a Twitter rant. He said, "Wait, I thought there was only Mezcal on the horizon. I'm so confused. Oh, wait, got it. I understand now. It's about patience. I guess there is a movie happening after all. Didn't realize I could talk about it. I guess I can. Thanks, New York Times, for blowing up this secret," because this did get kind of leaked. So he was kind of pissed there. And then someone replies, "That sounded really passive-aggressive, LOL." And then he replied, "Yeah, no kidding, my friend," which is a big burn. "I've literally been the only person on this planet to not talk about this damn thing, and now here we are. Vince absolutely crushed this thing on the page and on film. Thrilled for the world to finally see this piece of cinema history." So he's a little angry, but
when the mezcal ain't moving.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you should be eating some more mezcal. But I do like the end there. He obviously is very into what happened and what Vince was able to do. So looking forward to this. But yeah, he's got him.
Did he call that person my friend?
Yeah.
Was it actually his friend?
No.
Damn.
Fuck. Yeah, my friend or pal is brutal.
It's like pal, my friend, buddy, chief, big guy.
Squirt.
Squirt's bad.
Squirt's bad. Squirt's tough.
That's tough to recover from.
Yes. Squirt is basically getting dunked on.
What's up, Squirt?
Hey, just back from D23. Sup, Squirters?
How you doing? Oh, no. Oh, no.
Because of all my DNA out there.
The Squirters of Gahool.
That's what the G in Gahool stands for, is G-Spot.
No, I'm just thinking of owls just spitting everywhere. Just gleeking.
just gleek all the Ghoul owls gleeking the entire movie.
That's their only defense mechanism. they nut tap their bro and then gleek on their face.
Hit it from the back. Make it clap, clap, clap. What? What does that guardian sound like? I think they just sounded like people, but I assume they said who a lot.
The Ghouls?
Yeah, the Ghoulians.
Oh, wait, no, okay, no. The Ghoul seems to be a place.
Yeah, they guard it. Yeah. That's the point of the Guardians of Ghoul.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Those are the big things. It Chapter 2, first reactions came out. Not exactly what I wanted to see, because typically from these screenings, it's universal praise. It's typically always good, no matter how good the movie is. I didn't love what I saw here. It Chapter 2, a terrific companion to It Chapter 1, similar vibes, great ensemble cast. Part 2 plays heavier in tone, dealing with defeating the burden of childhood trauma. I definitely teared up at the very end. Bill Hader steals it, not bad. Then there's some other ones that are a little different. It Chapter 2 is probably scarier than It Chapter 1, more Pennywise imagery to haunt your dreams, but it also loses a lot of charm in the shifted focus from the coming of age to the now adult characters. At nearly 3 hours long, it feels long. It's like 2 hours and 45 minutes. This one was almost the exact opposite. It says it's not scary. So in Chapter 2, it's V good, but not great. I liked it, but I didn't love it. First movie is a tough act to follow. 2 is gruesome, strange, but rarely scary. Nails important aspects from the book, but feels overlong. Cast is aces, though, and Bill Hader should be in the Oscar conversation. So the one constant is that it is fun, but the biggest one is that Bill Hader is the best part of the movie, which is cool to hear. It's just not. I'm still very excited for this. Very pumped to see it in IMAX, but that's not the reaction you hope for. And in the same way, you should take every bit of review from an initial screen with a grain of salt. Like this worries me a little bit, because usually this is when people leave and go, "This fucking rule," because it's a different experience. So that's a little tough. Imagine if someone like you, Ken Jack, people saying it's not as good as 1. If that's the case for you, you're really not going to like this one.
Yeah, probably not. Although I think I'll actually like it more regardless, just because I like adult actor movies more than kid actor movies in general sense.
I don't have a take. I'm still excited for it. The Hater Man.
Other clown news, the Joker going to get a trailer this week. We'll talk about it later on.
Just Joker.
On our next episode. Yep, it is. But I'm going to keep calling it the Joker. That's
so stupid.
Every time I type that, I get roasted. But it's rated R. Confirmed rated R movie. Okay. Just two more things. Trailers. The first one, The Report with Adam Driver. Senate staffer Daniel J. Jones was tasked with leading an investigation into the CIA's systematic torture of terrorist suspects in the years following 9/11. The investigation concluded that the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques employed by the CIA were brutal, immoral, and ineffective, and that the CIA routinely misrepresented these facts to policymakers. When the Senate Intelligence Committee attempted to publish their findings, they had to contend with the CIA White House's attempts to block and undermine the reports. This is a political... it's like a CIA political thriller starring Adam Driver in the lead role. He's getting a lot of hype from it. A ton of people in this movie. Jennifer Morrison, Tim Blake Nelson, Ben McKenzie, Matthew Rhys, Ken Jack, big Matthew Rhys fan. Matthew Rhys. Annette Bening, John Hamm. So a cast with a lot of recognizable names. It's a CIA and political thriller. Trailer looked okay. It's going to be released on Amazon Prime on November 29th, but it'll be in theaters for about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think it looks good. I mean, we're obviously, I think we're a very pro Adam Driver podcast here. He actually had two big drops between this and Marriage Story. I think both of those are going to end up being very good movies.
What's it do with Marriage Story?
I don't really know. From what I could tell from the trailers, it's just him and Scarlett Johansson are married, have a kid, and divorce at some point. And something more intense than that, because there's like some pretty intense court proceedings.
Yeah, so. Marriage Story has Scarlett Johansson, Laura Dern, Alan Alda, Ray Liotta. That one's called Stage Director and His Actor Wife Struggle Through a Grueling Coast-to-Coast Divorce That Pushes Them to Their Personal and Creative Extremes. And that one's going to be on Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm more excited about that one.
That one comes out this week, I think.
I don't know if that's fair. I'm excited about them both.
It's Noah, what's his name? Fuck. He's an indie project guy. Noah Baumbach or something?
Comes out soon. That's all I know.
I'm definitely excited. I think we're excited for that one. You know who's not excited for this movie? Our Instagram commenters.
No, they were not happy.
They're like, what? Are you trying to say torture's bad? What?
I mean, I'm going to be honest. We're just posting an Adam Driver trailer, man.
Yeah, we're just posting a trailer, and like they're taking some big stance on waterboarding. Like, it's just a movie, my man. They're real pissed off. We are pro Bin Laden podcast or something just for posting a movie trailer.
Like, we posted the Zombieland trailer. They were like, you guys hate zombies or something?
Whoa, really fucked up.
Yeah. This is coming out.
My best friend's a zombie.
In the fall. That's a CIA political thriller. The next one is a media political thriller, and that is Bombshell, the Fox News movie.
Comments on that one too, right?
Oh, great. Yes.
Woo! Oh, you better believe it.
The comments on this one, they were great. Love doing this. It was originally going to be called Fair and Balanced. It is about the allegations against Roger Ailes. Charlize Theron is Megyn Kelly, who it does not look like Charlize Theron. It looks like Megyn Kelly. It is freaky, like almost unrecognizable. Nicole Kidman is Gretchen Carlson, and Margot Robbie playing Kayla Pospisil, which I don't know if that's a real person. I actually don't know that. Obviously, most people will know Gretchen Carlson, Megyn Kelly. Roger Ailes being played by John Lithgow. Rupert Murdoch being played by Malcolm McDowell. Just a bunch of recognizable names that you may know from news media in here. Neil Cavuto, Chris Wallace. It's the Fox News scandal movie, basically. Can't say I'm too pumped for this. Oh, boy. If you want a Christmas release, folks, this is it right here. Nothing says go see a movie with your family on Christmas like the Fox News scandal, Roger Ailes allegations movie. This comes out right alongside Star Wars and Cats.
Did the, Roger Ailes one with Russell Crowe get released?
Did it?
I have no idea. I just keep seeing Subway ads for it.
Because I've seen ads, but I don't know if it's been released yet. I don't think it has. If it has, then it must not be good because I've heard nobody talk about it.
Yeah. I think it's, is it a series or is it a movie?
I think it's a series. I think.
Yeah, I thought it was a series too.
Russell Crowe looks crazy.
Roger Ailes is getting sewered in multiple fronts, folks. We love to see it.
The loudest voice with Russell Crowe's Roger Ailes. This came out in June?
Damn.
Is that an HBO?
Showtime.
Yeah. Oh, that's probably why. It's Showtime. That's a bummer.
Not only is it out, it's over. It's done. Who knew?
Poor fucking Russell Crowe had to wear a comically large fat suit for the... Well, maybe not that comically large, but he had to wear a fat suit for this role. Didn't even get any recognition for it.
It's tough. He wasn't allowed to eat a bunch of cheeseburgers for a few months. That's the best part about gaining weight for a role, right? It's like that's what Matthew McConaughey did for Mutt. Just ate a bunch of cheeseburgers.
Yeah, just don't do the olive oil and ice cream diet.
God. All right, that's the longest news in the history of this pod, but you got to get to it. A lot of stuff coming out. We went from Disney really quickly down to political news media. Whew. We are going to be talking In Bruges. That's right. We're going to talk In Bruges, a movie from Martin McDonagh. This came out. It's on Netflix. Came out in 2008, January 17, 2008 at Sundance, and it was released in the United States on February 8, 2008. Synopsis. After a particularly difficult job, Hitman Ray, played by Colin Farrell, and Ken, played by Brendan Gleeson, head to Belgium to hide out until things cool down. Ray hates the medieval city they land in, but Ken finds its beauty and peacefulness enchanting. Their experiences become increasingly surreal and possibly life-changing as they encounter tourists, locals, an American dwarf, and a potential romance for Ray played by Ralph Fiennes. This movie cost $15 million to make. It made $34.5 million at the box office. It's a dark comedy crime movie. It's very much a dark comedy. Very much so. Not lighthearted in the least bit. But it's funny. We've talked about it a bunch on here. Hour 47 runtime, 84% Rotten Tomatoes, 67% on Metacritic. By the way, speaking of budget, can I just note something? Remember the movie Missing Link?
Yeah.
The one that came out this summer? You know how much that movie cost? Take a guess. Take a stab at the budget.
$142 million.
I was going to say like $125
million. $100 million. It made $25 million.
Yikes. Damn.
That's insane.
That's real bad.
Hugh Jackman, Zoe Saldana, Zach Galifianakis, and they lost $75 million.
Well, in Bruges made almost nothing in the United States.
That's not surprising.
It opened at like, let's see. So this is in Bruges was released in limited cinemas and opened in 28 cinemas in the United States, grossing $125,000 on the opening day and close to $500,000 on the opening weekend. And then on its second weekend, it was in 112 theaters. And then its third weekend, it got to 163. But the release wasn't really all that wide. It still made pretty good return on that. So not much in the States. But
doing facts early, huh?
No, I was just surprised. Because I was reading through this movie, and one of the things that I don't know why I didn't know this, but I, for some reason, I just assumed Martin McDonagh had a longer filmography, and this was his first feature length film. No, he released Six Shooter in 2004, also with Brendan Gleeson, who's Domhnall's dad. But I think this was a short film, and then this was his first feature length director and writer credit as well. And then he didn't do another movie as director and screenwriter in 2012. And this next one was Three Billboards.
Yep. Seven Psychopaths, good though.
I didn't hate Seven Psychopaths. I didn't love it, but I didn't like hate it. I still like Three Billboards. Oh, it's an incredibly divisive film, and some people absolutely hate it. Like, people either love it or they're like, this is a pile of shit. But I like Martin McDonagh. I get why some people don't like him. Some of the stuff he does is off-putting. I do love In Bruges, though. I ranked all comedy movies last week. I think I talked about it on our last pod. I didn't put this one in there because it didn't count. I didn't want to count dark comedies or like a dramedy like The Big Sick, but I give In Bruges a 92 out of 100. I really enjoy this movie every single time I watch it. I hadn't watched it in a long time, though. Mm-hmm. I had not watched it in a while. Kendrick, I know you watch it like once a month almost, but you're a big fan, right? But rightfully so. I gave it a 92. For the audience, it has a 90 out of 100. That's what the audience gave In Bruges.
I'm trying to think. We did our rankings of best comedies of the last 10 years or something.
Yours was on. It was on there.
Yeah, I know I had it on it. I just don't remember what place I had it in.
I'll look it up.
But yeah, no, that was really good. And you know who Martin McDonagh is in? Who's been dating? True.
Yeah, Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah, your queen.
Everybody's queen.
True. That's also true. I give this movie a 96 out of 100. Huge fan of it. I think it's just expertly shot. I think it's just like so. Everything is subtle, right? Like, until it's not. And I think that's something that a lot of the best comedies that I like do very well. I think it is perfectly cast as well. Like, they each have like their own different, I would say, roles in it. Like, Colin Farrell is like kind of like the in between, I would say, like fluid situation sort of. I don't want to use like a stupid term here, but like the pathos or ethos type dude. And then like Ray is like everything's black and white. The action isn't as important as the action is more important than like your intent. And then what's his name? Ken has always been like just, I would say it's gray. Everything's gray, right? Like you think your intent is more important than your action. It's cool because like it kind of like challenges you a little bit, right? Like in a little bit of like your ground, your moral authority.
Yeah.
Think about like what their actions are, what your own actions are. I've always enjoyed that. And beyond that, it's just fucking like rip-roariously funny. Like it's extremely, extremely well-written and funny. And I think that all of them act their roles perfectly. And just, it's a very hard movie to talk about, but I'm glad we are talking about it because I'd like to get other people's thoughts on it.
Yeah. For me, I'm at a 90. It's very much a play. It's, and I mean, which makes sense because, McDonough is a playwright by trade. before getting into movies, and he might still be active in that thing. But there's like noticeable acts, like before Harry, you know, act one is before Harry shows up, and then act two is when Harry shows up. And also like just some of the bit characters as well, and like their entanglement and plays always have, you know, they always take a little more liberty with the twists, like, and for this one, I think that like the ending just reminded me kind of like of what you'd see at the end of a play, just very abrupt, very like, oh my God. And then it's done. So that's why I really enjoy it from a humor standpoint. I didn't think it was as uproariously funny to me as maybe it was to you. I thought the comedy was great. I thought it was probably, and we can get in because Jeff, I know your questions around Colin Farrell, but for me, a lot of it was just like when I saw it the first time was seeing Colin Farrell in this like really insecure and rattled character, whereas before he was like a guy with a Target tattoo on his head in some of his movies and whatnot. But I really enjoyed it, and it also isn't very long, like which
no,
is
credit. It goes by fucking quick.
Yeah, and part of that goes into the movie did a really good job of making you feel trapped in Bruges, trapped yep. in Bruges with them, because it's not an expansive movie. It feels like there's maybe four locations total. And I really enjoyed that because you felt like, you know, you didn't have many options. It wasn't expansive. You were there with them. You could either be in the hotel room or in the hotel, or you could be on the tower. But other than that,
that's it.
Yeah, there weren't many other locations. So it gave you that sense of like, you know, just how at least Colin Farrell's character was feeling at the time, which some of it was by design, but I'm sure it was budgetary constraints dictating the design, which then led to a really great finished product.
You're right. It did make you feel like sort of trapped along with them, which is like a very good, it's I think a tough kind of thing to convey, like that feeling, right?
Well, but it's back to that play design. It's a very small movie. There, I mean, how many credited roles are there in this? Probably eight, maybe a little more than that. There are not a whole lot of characters, and that just again, it reminds me of like a play where like you show up and maybe they have four different backdrops, and maybe there are eight people in the play, and then you're not there for a whole lot of time. So I really like that aspect of it.
It very much dives in. It does a perfect job of giving you every aspect of the character that they can without making it feel overly long or stuff. Like I said, it flies by and you feel like you know fucking every detail about these characters. If you feel like you've known these guys forever, he paints such a great picture, Martin McDonagh does. He obviously wrote it as well as directed it, at making sure you understand just like the ideals, just like the personalities of both Ray. And by the way, I said Ray is played by Ray Fiennes. That's not right. He plays Harry. I said that wrong earlier. Of Ray and Ken, Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. And I think that's why I saw some people say we had like a discussion on Reddit, like, oh, a little slow in the beginning. I don't think it is slow. I think it just gives a really, really deep dive into who they are. And then they pull you back a little bit and it sets up kind of the climax of the story and the peak of everything comes to a head and why they're there.
Yeah, it's weird because like you don't really get like a backstory, like traditionally speaking, of like what the character's about. You kind of just have it within the scope of what had happened within like the last week, and then the week that takes place in like Bruges, and that's really all you get. And even in, like you said, within that scope, you feel like you get to know them still so much more than like other movies give you when they might give you an entire origin story.
Yeah, like I hate being one to like always rail on like length of time. Like, I mean, my favorite movie of the year is Once Upon our best movie. My favorite movie is Avengers Endgame, but the best movie, best, is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I would actually almost say it's neck and neck with Avengers at this point. I fucking love that movie. The movie's long as shit. I have no problem with that. But I also love when a movie's able to do what they did, like in Bruges, in such a smaller time frame where you don't need to, he didn't bore us with anything, right? I don't need to know the younger side of Ray or Ken, right? Like he was able to. And that's a testament too to Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell. Like their performances were fucking great, but like that allows them to develop the characters so much quicker, but also give you everything that you need to connect and give a shit about them. Like the fact that you give a shit about Ray sitting there with a gun pointed to his head and Ken maybe gonna kill him. Like that says a lot. It's only halfway through the movie, and you're like, oh shit, I feel like I've lived with this guy already, right?
Well, and the other, I mean, the example is, this was, you know, the London happenings where that was Ray's first kill or murders. And, you know, you knew that Kim brought him on, but you didn't know what led up to that. And the movie didn't make you care about that. Like, everything was pretty much irrelevant beside what you actually needed to know for this movie. And they did a good job of characterizing so much in the present that you really didn't give a shit about the past.
I mean, look at the budget. Look at the box office. I mean, it's a respected movie now, but I think it's still a crazily underappreciated movie for what it was. And I don't even think people totally, like, critically speaking, it had decent ratings, but I don't even think then they bought into what it was. And it's like, it's simple, too. And it looks great. It makes me actually want to go to Bruges.
Right? Looks like a beautiful time.
Like, I mean, just like the way, my favorite scene is when Ray finds Harry and Brendan Gleeson's Ken are sitting down having a beer. When he shows up after Ken didn't kill Ray, and he shows up to exact, you know, vengeance and get even with Ken for not killing Ray, they're just sitting there with a beer. And just the way it's shot, the way it looks, the lighting, it's Christmas time. Like, their back and forth is great. Like, they play off each other so well. He talks about his kids. He starts shitting all over his kids.
That bit about my fucking kids.
it's just funny, and they have all such great chemistry, and so many of these scenes, it's dark as shit, but there's like still kind of like a cheerful vibe to it. Again, it's all dark, like almost. I don't think there's one like up. I think I'm trying to think of the upbeat joke. I feel like the only actual upbeat joke is after he doesn't kill him and he doesn't kill himself, when he's like, "Ah, get a load of this." He thought it was a treat to send you to Bruges. Like, everything else is like a very like on the negative side of comedy. Like, that might have been the only more like oh ha ha type of joke. But everything here is it's just wonderfully written and acted. They play off each other so well.
Yeah, I like how they're all like super great too. Like, you, like, I think it's easy on first watch to look at Harry and be like, he's the bad guy. Like, all right, yeah, like, he's the crime boss, he's the bad dude for sure. But like, even when you watch the movie like a few more times, whatever, like, you notice like the shit, like, he doesn't want to kill Ken, right? Like, they have the scene up in the tower and everything, or like, he's about to kill him, and he's like, no, I'm not gonna fight you, Harry. Like, you're my friend, I'm not gonna fight you. And he's like, well, now, like, I can't kill you, like, you're my friend, I'm not gonna do that either. And like, he wants him to die with dignity and shit. And like, even with he doesn't even want to like straight up murder Colin Farrell for like the actions. Like, he wants to like go show him a good time, like, let him have one last happy memory before he dies. Like, they're all like in their own way, like, three-dimensional and just like interesting, you know? It's not like you can pick a certain character and be like, they're good, they're bad. Like, they both have aspects of both. And like, I think it's just, it's good because it keeps you off balance throughout the movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of goes into the whole honor amongst thieves thing where, yeah, Harry's got a real, I mean, that's why he goes. I mean, he tells his wife that, or I think I'm assuming it's his wife, and, you know, he's in his really nice looking mansion. And says, well, I got to go. It's about honor. And he has a code. And you start thinking about, like, you know, what does that honor really mean when your job is to murder people? And so it's, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like, I mean, he's still a murderer. He still murders people, yeah, for money. So he's a bad person.
So, but see, that's where they try and twist you too, right? With Ken, where they make him, they tell you kind of like, he says, everyone I've killed, I don't feel that bad because I've only killed so many people and they've all been bad. There's only one person I've killed where I felt bad about it, and they were just because they were just like defending someone else. And like, that's where you kind of think about it, like, okay, like, being a vigilante, killing bad people, maybe that's not such a bad thing, right? So that's where they try and twist you up with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's thought provoking in the sense that it's just like, you get to the character of Harry is you assume he would be a complete psychopath, which, I mean, he still might be. Like, he's still pretty crazy, but by the time he gets there and decides, you know, not to kill Ken, or at least kill Ken until he finds out that he has to kill Ken in order to kill Ray, he shows some compassion, and it's acted really well in showing compassion. And even the act, like you were saying, of taking Ray to Bruges was an act of a compassion in itself, but it's just a really sick, twisted version of what a terrible person might think honor looks like, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think it's weird too, because I think they kind of present Ray as the guy to latch onto, right? Like, at least at the start.
Yeah, they want you to be most sympathetic with Ray, right?
And like, he's like kind of actually the biggest asshole out of all of them combined.
Oh, I think he sucks the most.
Like, he's like a racist, sexist, dickhead person, is like making fun of everybody, like treating everybody like shit. Also killed the kid. Obviously the worst part of the entire movie. Yes,
he does. Yeah, like, he does kill the kid.
Kind of like the moral question of the entire thing. And like, you're supposed to kind of be rooting for him, but he's still such an asshole that like, you don't even really notice it.
I mean, he just straight calls up those people elephants, which I know is one of the more like, it's one of the more famous parts of the movie where he just yells at the Americans. Americans and Canadians, bad rap in this movie.
I like that part. And when the guard tells the guys, like, you can't go in the tower. And he's just like poking him in the face. He's poking Harry in the face. He's like, no, in the tower.
So that's such good physical comedy too, where it's like not cheap physical comedy, because they've played Harry up to be such an intense villain in terms of like, he doesn't put up with bullshit and respect is like his thing. And this guy is just relentlessly fucking tapping, which the forehead tap is one of the most disrespectful things you could ever do.
That's so disrespectful.
So he's just doing it, and he just keeps doing it and doing it and doing it. And he's doing it off camera too, because then you just see Ken kind of walk by. I'm like, ah, fuck, he's going to kill him. He's going to kill this guy right now. That's another great one.
I think one of the things I like about this movie is they did a room. I mean, I don't even know if you can call it subplot. You know, it's the plot, the romantic aspect of it, where Ray's character meets a drug dealer in Chloe. And, you know, at first we see her on scene with the movie. And, you know, when I rewatched it, I mean, obviously I knew who she was. When I watched it the first time, I thought she was involved in the production of the movie, but she turns out to be a drug dealer. And that leads into a scene where it turns out that at some point they're attempting on robbing him as he was back in her boudoir. And
good word.
Then that doesn't sour the relationship. I mean, maybe a little bit for a minute, but like he buys her word, and they're somehow able near the end of the movie to still be enjoying each other's company. So it's kind of just like, I like the fact that they made her, I mean, I wouldn't say, you know, she's, I don't know if you can say she's a bad person. I think that might go a little too far, but I don't think necessarily dealing, you know, people heroin is the most honest of jobs, but certainly not as bad as being a contract killer who's murdered a child. But I thought that like them making her, you know, not be, because what I expected the first time is that like he would be you know, a contract killer, and she would be an actress, and he would have to hide that from her. But basically, you know, they kind of found each other's company in just living on the underbelly of society.
Mm-hmm. And that whole scene where they even figure it out too, where they're just straight up honest with each other right off the bat with the drugs and the guns. That's that Canadian scene as well, where he thinks they're Americans and she's blowing the cigarette smoke and he just punches the shit out of both of them.
Like, what about Vietnam, motherfucker? That's such a good goddamn scene. You know what I really liked about this movie, and the more I noticed it more, more times I saw it, was like the soundtrack is so perfect. It's like,
yeah, nice, the score, right? Of the movie, everything. Yeah.
Yep. Nice little piano notes, nice and light. And it just accompanies pretty much every scene. Like, it's just exquisitely, I would say, like the perfect word to describe.
That's, again, that contrasts into the tone with when they're yelling at each other over beers and they're using as colorful a language as it gets. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it like at a Christmas setting, right? Like, yeah. It has this striking feel to it that pops. My favorite, I think, dialogue, though, is probably on the phone when Harry calls him Ken. Yeah. Phone, and he goes back and forth, and Harry tells Ken that Ray does, it's like not his thing, Bruges, and he says the line, is the swan still there? And he goes, yeah, the swans. He goes, how can fucking swans not fucking be somebody's fucking thing? It just establishes that character so well. Like, that's it, that's that character.
Well, that whole scene was just incredibly tense because you didn't know where it would go. And it was very drawn out just in terms of like the acting job that Gleason had to do, because he was the only person on screen for maybe the entirety of what seemed like a 5-minute scene. And there are lapses of silence where he would have to go pretend to close the door and say bye to Ray and whatnot. And it kind of just built into something that it was absurd, right? You expected Harry to just be completely off his rocker, and instead he was just really trying to get a better grasp of how someone couldn't enjoy Bruges because he liked it when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Just maniacally mad over that fact. I love that character so much, the Harry character. I think that just all the dialogue in the third act was so goddamn good and just well written and well acted. That's one of, I think, maybe out of all the dark comedies that I've seen, I think this is, overall, the movie is my favorite. The third act is by far my favorite as well. It's so just perfect. Perfectly tense, not overboard and gratuitous with the violence. Because like at that point, you've had like a couple violent scenes, like the confrontation with Eric, the drug dealer guy, and the fight with the bottle and shit. Like, you know, in the with the Canadian whatever person.
Where he says that's for John Lennon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I get to that point, I think we're all thinking, okay, now they're going to get in like the super violent gunfight shit. And like you get that, but it's not overboard. It's still like within reason, which was, I thought, nice as well.
The one who plays the dwarf character in the movie, Jordan Prentice, did you know he played Howard the Duck?
No, I did not.
He was one of the people that played Howard the Duck.
Good for him. Getting some nice roles in there. See, he with that character, also an asshole.
Huge dick. That guy sucked. Not that I wanted him to die, but that guy sucked.
That guy sucked big time. The bottle thing they referenced too. So, like twice in the movie. Like, do you remember the Ken's character references killing someone that attacked him with a bottle? And then they referenced the bottle. He's like, oh, I was attacked with a bottle, so that's fine. Like that was my reasoning with it. And then when they're doing the dinner scene with the Canadians, like the lady attacks Ray with a bottle, and that's when he attacks her.
Yeah, that's right.
A little come full circle moment.
Other things to know. Is your favorite line, Ken Jack, the inanimate object line, where he yells at his wife, says, you're a fucking inanimate object?
That is really, really good. Just that whole phone conversation leading into that, too, it just fucking destroys his phone. Is so good. I just think all the dialogue in the third act, like, I don't want to narrow it down to a single line, but, like, that's so great. And just, like, the closing line that Harry's character says, where he's like, we all, like, stick to our principles, like, it's just, love it.
Just a couple of small notes. One, this is the most Harry Potter cast in the world.
Oh, yeah.
You have Colin Farrell, now that he's in the Harry Potter universe, in Fantastic Beasts. Brendan Gleeson's obviously in it. Clemens Posey's in it. She marries one of the Weasley twins, right?
For Delacour.
Yeah, and who, the Weasley twins. Does she marry Domhnall Gleeson's character?
Is that Bill Weasley?
One of them did. Regardless, Weasley, Gleeson... doesn't play a Weasley, but father of an actual Weasley actor. And then Ralph Fiennes, obviously, here at Voldemort.
Well, he also is in Harry Potter, Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Yeah, but he's like, not only that, but like his son plays Harry Potter. Yeah. So wild Harry Potter stuff there. According to one of the best people on our Reddit, Mesh said, I don't know if this is real or not, but I'm just going to say it's real. The word fuck and its derivatives are said 126 times in the 107-minute film. So sabermetrics, there's 1.18 fucks per minute.
That's awesome.
That's a great stat. That's just a great stat right there.
And about my fucking kids.
I think that's all the small stuff. So Trill, let's get we'll start with you. What's your big question here for In Bruges?
Did Ray die at the end?
See, I didn't think about this. This is why it's your big question.
Because I think he did. He said he really hoped he wouldn't die. Which, if you think of you're in the act of dying, you would say, I hope I don't die.
And he is so shot at that point.
Yeah. I mean, he's very shot. But also, like, this is and going back to the violence thing, and not overly violent, but the scenes which you see, like, graphic deaths are to heavily imply that someone is dead. Because with Ken, he got shot and then jumped out of a tower and then splattered on the ground, and he was still alive for a few minutes after that.
Yeah, that was kind of wild.
Yeah, and so and then Ray got lit up pretty bad. And so the times we see the really violent things are for on screen characters who have actually died. I think that he died just because of the way he phrased it. If you say, I hope I wouldn't die, implies that you actually did die. Like, I hope it wouldn't have happened, instead of saying, I hope it doesn't happen. So I think he did. And I don't think it matters if he did or he doesn't. It's still, you know, it doesn't change anything. It's not like we're going to get an In Bruges 2, like where... you know, Electric Ray Boogaloo. But I thought it was interesting because for me it was an interpretation of his wording.
Because even no matter what, like, he likes this girl, like, maybe he'll still stay in Bruges, yet he says hell is spending it the rest of eternity just in Bruges. Like, I think it plays perfectly into that. I think he is. I think you're right. That's how I'm going to play it. This is the is the top spinning of the dark comedy universe, essentially.
Did Ray die in Bruges? I'm gonna Google it.
While you look that one up, Ken Jack, big question from this movie. What do you got?
So I think the big question they kind of pose throughout the movie, it's just like, maybe thematically, it's just about like mistakes. So like, do you think a mistake like Ray's, not necessarily Ray, should be forgiven? Because like Harry is super black and white on it, right? Like the action is more important than the intent, and Ken think that the intent is more important. So like, do you think like a mistake like Ray's, where like he obviously didn't mean to kill the kid, like it was a mistake and like his intent wasn't there, but the action still happened. Do you think something like that should be forgiven?
I think, well, obviously in the context of their jobs too, because like,
yeah,
not that I assume you just think killing a kid should be, but like in the context of their job, it is interesting because it's such a gruesome, like your job is to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And at that point it was in a church. So yeah, I mean, it's a gruesome job where one has such like a, such a, like this moral compass that like he killed a kid, or he thought he killed a kid, and then he killed himself at the end. Cause he's like, shit, I got to stick to my morals here. I got to stick to my principle. I think it's his principles. Yeah, you got to stick to your principles. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty insane line to draw too with their job.
What the other thing is, going off your question, is does forgiveness from others matter if you can't forgive yourself?
Yeah,
because ultimately, you know, as much as Ken could, you know, try to, and I'm not sure he was also like, I think he was just trying to keep Ray like with him, and I do think Ken was like a little bit taken aback by it, but ultimately, like it wouldn't matter what anyone else would say to Ray, because he couldn't forgive himself for it, and so ultimately that doesn't matter. Like he didn't want to live with it.
Yeah, because I mean, like Ken told him 1,000 times, like half the beginning of the movie is just like Ken telling him it's not really your fault. Like you should forgive yourself for this. It was a mistake. Like, it's kind of collateral damage of the job, and him just saying like, no, like this is really bad, like a life ending fuck up, more or less. But yeah, I think that's a really, actually maybe even more important question.
Yeah. Cause he, you're right. He really just never, ever forgives himself, at least in that context of the movie. And no matter how hard Ken tries to explain, like you said, Ken, he talks about how he only killed one person that he didn't actually want to kill. And he's trying to like compare that character, like, what if he knew karate, all that? And then he starts yelling, like, what the fuck? He goes, what are we talking about here? Like, I'm talking about something way worse than that. So it's not even like on his mind, the concept of that. Even when he gets in the train, it's like, he's like, are you going to go through with it? He's like, I don't know. So it's to him, it obviously doesn't mean shit at all. Cause clearly Ken's told him at that point, like, you know, you got to move on. You got to find, you know, new meaning, new hope. And he's like, I don't fucking care. Basically didn't matter to him one bit.
Yeah, I think he was, I mean, he was trying to, it's like he was continuously trying to talk himself out of it, but at his heart, he knew that he would never be able to live with it. And I think some of, you know, his relationship with Chloe was a distraction from that. But ultimately, like, even though this was over the span of a couple of days, like it seemed like something he would never be able to allow himself to forgive himself for. Probably. I don't think most people would either. Right. Like, so that, I mean, that's where you kind of, I don't want to say like, I don't want to relate with the character because like he did something like horrendous, but I think you relate from someone in just in terms of experience and guilt, and also like understand like kind of, you know, how that guilt can like cause you to spiral in a sense.
And that's, again, this goes to part why it's such a great dark comedy too. There's much more to it, right? I'll bring my one thing up. I'll kind of change it up a bit. The big question won't always just be about the movie. I kind of want to talk about Colin Farrell. I'm trying to think where I would put this. Where would you put this against all of Colin Farrell's other roles? Dumbo, Saving Mr. Banks. Now, where would you put this with?
Pretty sick. I think Phone Booth's like 1B here.
Phone Booth, okay. Okay.
I genuinely enjoy that movie. It was an FX banger.
Phone Booth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Phone Booth. Colin Farrell has a really weird filmography, and typically I feel like I enjoy Colin Farrell when he's like in Minority Report. I liked his character.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I thought that was like well done. I don't think that was the best movie, but I liked him there. I did not like him in SWAT.
he was asked to
that's another great FX movie.
Yeah, well, I don't know about great. That's really stretching the definition.
Well, I mean, great for the relative like sphere of FX movies.
But then they cast him again in Miami Vice.
Oh, that's dumb.
Yeah, which was a stinker. It was him and Jamie Foxx, and you know, you can't really compare it because this is obviously a way different type of movie. This veers on the prestige cinema end of things, whereas something like SWAT is a DVD bin trash at the gas station. But he's also had some other things, like he was in Crazy Heart.
The Lobster was really good.
What's that?
The Lobster and The Killing.
Lobster would be up there for me.
Lobster's good. And there's been movies where he's been on the periphery of things, and there's been movies where he starred in, and I think he can do it all. Like I think he's that talented where he could just do anything he wants. And another thing he did pretty well is I thought he was awesome in Horrible Bosses.
Yeah, he was so good in Horrible Bosses.
Big scumbag in that movie.
Say what you want, but he played that so over the top that he was easily the best Horrible Boss.
Oh, by far. Between him and Jennifer Aniston, then, is those the only two options.
That's a funny movie that I don't think has enough praise.
Yeah.
That's very funny. Those three were great together.
I was just talking about the Jamie Foxx bit in Horrible Bosses, and that was one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen.
Motherfucker Jones.
Yeah, Motherfucker Jones. And he's like, I slipped my hands into her purse. Do you ever hear them Falling on Cedars? I pirated that movie. It's like, no, I didn't hear Falling on Cedars. And they go back to it later. It's like you went to jail for pirating a fucking Ethan Hawke movie. So you do
the movie. That is the hardest to laugh at. He's like, so you do know. That's
such a fucking goddamn. What a great. I'm gonna rewatch that soon.
The thing about this though, I think that was so cool about what Colin Farrell did in it is this was like a midpoint, not maybe not a midpoint, but this was maybe a quarter point in his career where he just got done being in some stinkers. Okay, like he was in Miami Vice, he was in Alexander in SWAT, he was in Daredevil, which sucked big ass. So then he's in this In Bruges movie, and I think this was people's first time really seeing Colin Farrell less as like a attractive Irishman on big screen blockbuster and more in like the role he was in here, where it was a complex character. It was a character that was kind of didn't like him, but kind of liked him, and you didn't really know how you felt about him. And a lot of that went to how he was just kind of insolent and an asshole and whatever. And it like at that time when I saw it, I was like, holy shit, like Colin Farrell's a pretty good actor. This guy who's in SWAT in Miami Vice, he's got some chops.
What was that one he was in where he was like a CIA agent with Al Pacino? I just remember, is it The Farm? They kept calling it The Farm over and over again. I don't remember, but I thought that one was okay. Hearts War, another FX banger.
Total the Recall. Recruit? Total
the Recruit. Recall. That was the one with the recruit, Al Pacino, yeah. Right? Yep. Total Recall, baby.
You know what movie stunk? Alexander. That movie was terrible.
Oh, Alexander was terrible.
It was so god-awful. I remember being so hyped up for that as a history guy and just being like, this, I might just throw up.
You wrote a letter to Oliver Stone. Fuck you, Oliver Stone.
Oliver, you fuck.
Bryan Cranston was in Total Recall. I always forget that. I just pulled up Wikipedia. I totally forgot about that.
That was a movie that did not need to be remade.
No.
At all. Total Recall was fine.
No reason.
Left alone.
Just no reason. There's an alternate ending to that movie too, like a director's cut ending.
You know what else he was good in, just to like wrap up, I guess, Colin Farrell talk. Like, True Detective season 2 was terrible. It was very, 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 very bad. But the best part about it was his character. Like, he did a very, very good job playing him.
Because he had that son.
Yeah, that ginger son that he just hated.
Yeah, just didn't like his son at all.
What'd they do to your Jordans? What'd they do to him? And then he goes and like beats up that dad in front of his son.
Oh, man.
It's fucking ridiculous.
He was in Widows last year too, and he had a character in Widows. Widows, I thought, was a good movie that was not as good as it had been hyped up before it came out. It didn't end up landing as much as I thought it would, but his character was good. And he had that scene, that one shot scene where he's in a car and you don't even see him. He's just talking on the phone because he starts in the part, like the district that he's
talking to his assistant, right?
Yeah. He's in the district. It starts in the district he represents, which is poor, run down, And then he drives to where he lives, which is not in that district. And it just, it really sets up the class part of that movie. Mm-hmm. And it's not all on him, but it is a genius scene. And he was one of the characters that did
as McQueen, baby.
In terms of Rotten Tomatoes, his movies over 80%, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, Seven Psychopaths, In Bruges, The Lobster, love The Lobster, Crazy Heart, Widows, Minority Report, his highest earning movies. So he only has, so he's done 37 movies. 12 of them have made over $100 million. And the top five are Horrible Bosses, $209 million. Epic, $268 million. Dumbo, $353 million. Fuck that movie. That movie sucks. Minority Report, $358 million. And then way, way, way up beyond that is Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them at $814 million worldwide. Never forget the sequel didn't make more. We didn't have to eat the candy off the back of an Elmo.
Thank God.
Never forget. That might have just been me, though. I don't remember. So yeah, that's where we land on old Colin Farrell. But In Bruges overall, it's a great movie. It really is. It's such a change of pace, I think, between like everything we've watched too. Like, I guess you could, Inglourious Basterds in a sense, a bit of a dark comedy, but this is like, it's just different. It's just very, very character driven, very dark, but also, you know, it kind of makes you think in spots and it moves quick. But you learn to really be invested in characters who aren't people that you should like. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the genius with this movie. So I'm very happy we watched it. Overall, the score, it comes in at number two so far at a 92 out of 100. It's a 92 out of 100. This drops it right behind Inglourious Basterds and ahead of Fifth Element at 72, Limitless at 65, B-Movie at 53, and then rounding out the six we've watched so far, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So that's where we land on In Bruges. We all like it a lot, no doubt about that. Audience had a blast with it. Our Reddit, we had some discussion into people, big fans, love the comedy. They motored out a bunch of lines. I think the Inanimate Object was one they noted the most. Next week, though, we're reviewing 40-Year-Old Virgin. That's Trill's pick.
Never seen it.
That's...
No, I'm sure. Of course I've seen it. Guys, come on now.
We're going to have to get creative on that. Digging out big questions out of a straight up, flat out comedy. But there is a lot to talk about. I actually have not watched that in full in a while. It has one of my favorite running gags in any comedy movie ever. If you watch the video that we did and released, I think I may have talked about it even before that at some point. I do want to talk about that. But pumped about talking 40-Year-Old Virgin. We got to nominate movies next week, too. There was one I actually looked up. There was one, though, you know what? Maybe, I don't know if I want to do comedy two Sundays in a row, but maybe we do Austin Powers the weekend after that. But there is one I looked up, and I forget what I looked up that I want to review. I forgot what it was, but I'm trying to hammer out a list of some movies that we can nominate, at least on my end.
Let me look on Prime Video.
Okay,
good. I got the T on that. I'll give you the old link.
Toss some ideas out there, Trill.
Ew.
Mission Impossible Fallout just came to streaming.
We'll just re-review that after reviewing it.
Just a retro, you know, we'll look back on it. Look back at it.
You know what I looked up that's not on any of these?
Let's do 300.
Romeo plus Juliet.
Oh.
It's not on streaming platforms, though.
Oh, no, that stinks. So sad.
The Saint with Val Kilmer.
I was just watching MacGruber a couple days ago. Still holds up. He took an Upper Decker in his toilet.
That's, I mean, so I don't like MacGruber as much as you guys do.
Spider-Man 3 in honor of Spider-Man.
That might be good.
Is Spider-Man 3 on?
It's on Prime Video.
Interesting. Okay, that might be worth nominating.
Robin Hood Men in Tights on Hulu. That might be worth it.
Oh, that would be a good one.
Or Idiocracy. That would actually be really good. Now I'm all in on Robin Hood Men in Tights. That might be my nomination.
What about 50 Shades of Black?
I mean, I've watched that movie. No thanks.
In honor of
sextuplets?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
The Godzilla, the 90 whatever one. It's going on Amazon Prime, I think.
The Matthew Broderick led Godzilla?
Yeah, hell yeah.
1997 one.
3D Doritos. Let's see. Lincoln Lawyer. No, thank you.
Get my Godzilla toys at FAO Schwartz. These are two things that will never leave us.
I have some good options.
Is FAO Schwartz an Apple store now? Because it seems like it would be an Apple store now.
No, it's next to the Apple store, though. FAO Schwartz is coming back. There's an FAO Schwartz that opened up at Rockefeller Plaza.
But what about the topic now?
What about the legendary FAO Schwartz? It was right outside Central Park. Like, what's in there now?
Let me look it up. I forget what it was. Let's see.
It's a Panera.
Because I mean, that FAO Schwartz, that's the one from Big, obviously. The big piano, which I don't know where the big piano is. I know they preserved the big piano. I don't know where it is though. Let's see here. What is in there? It claims to be Apple, but it's not Apple. Because Apple's underground.
Is that the cube one?
Yeah, the cube one, which they changed it in some respects. I don't know what they did with it though. Well, this has to be old because this says FAO Schwartz outside the building. There's just no way. Yeah, Google Maps. Holy shit. I mean, Google Maps, update your street view. This is crazy. This thing closed down like 10 years ago.
Hate to see it.
It's a rough look, Google.
Google has
send more fucking video cars through the streets.
Google more has Nissan Versas.
Yeah.
Top of it.
I saw one of the Apple ones like the day they announced it on like Fifth Avenue.
Oh, by the way, speaking of products, now that we're in the twilight hour of this show, my lunchbox Kickstarter thing.
Oh, I saw.
So there's supposed to be an update. There's supposed to be an update. I haven't checked today. Let's see. They've been teasing for 2 weeks an update by today. No update. That's tough.
Why would you tease an update if you're not going to do an update?
For those who are unaware, I bought this lunchbox on Kickstarter.
It's the bento box, right?
Yeah, it's very cool looking. Bought it summer of 2017, or I backed it summer 2017. They were fully funded by June. Supposed to come out Christmas 2017. Still don't have it. Still haven't been asked what color we want to pick, and they have not confirmed if it's even finished yet.
No way it's been finished.
The comments are so, and they're starting to get snippy too, and they have no right to be snippy whatsoever. And the comments, people are just not pleased. I'll read a couple of the comments here. One guy says, let's see, hey, Fippo, where's the update? I need a lunchbox! Exclamation point. I mean, at that point, though, you should probably just go buy a lunchbox.
Get a new lunchbox.
It's hard to believe that it takes...
Imagine just carrying a big pile of spaghetti in his hands to work. God damn it, Fippo!
It's hard to believe that it takes more than 2 years for a lunchbox to materialize. 2 years for a lunchbox. Crazy. Don't want to be polite anymore. This is crap. I need an update regarding the status of my refund. You didn't contact me yet. There is zero chance an update will happen by Sunday, maybe by December. And then someone replied to that saying zero is being optimistic. And the last one, this is the best one. Someone asked, when is it coming out? And they said, this autumn, 100%. And the reply is, so basically another 5 to 6 months waiting. This has been the longest mold process in the industry since the first industrial revolution. Spot on.
It's true. You really wonder what's taking so long there. And I'm on the webpage and they got $320,000 out of a $15,000 goal.
That's
extra capital to make sure this shit happens.
I mean, that's a significant amount more money.
My guess for what happened here is that they didn't think it would be as successful as it was going to be, and they couldn't find anybody to do it in large enough quantities to fulfill the demand. But that doesn't explain why they wouldn't just roll it out and, you know, it's better to give some people their lunchboxes than not have any lunchboxes at all.
Oh, it's just tough. But they're not replying. They're not giving refunds. They yelled at someone. He's like, what's up with the renders? Like, stop sending us renders. And they said, stop commenting about the renders. So they're getting mad. But no update. We're supposed to have one by the end of the day. So I'll give them a little more time. I just don't see it happening. This is one of those that just lost cause. But yeah, man, three. And then on Indiegogo, they made like the number on Indiegogo is like 384 million. But I think that's like Kickstarter plus the amount. So $400,000 and you ask for 15, like you got to make your lunchboxes quicker. Only 4,000 of them. That's all you got to make. Anyway, shout out to Fippo. Anything else before we move on? Angel has fallen this week.
Hooray.
With fights. I don't know. What are we ranking? I forget what we're doing.
Angels.
Chris Angel.
Movie Angels.
One. Maybe cool, action cool stars.
Thesis.
My number one angel, Tilda Swinton and Constantine.
You know, it'd be funny, an action star draft. That might be fun.
We should save that for like an actually great action movie.
Yeah, I feel like Fights is the perfect one to have on for that, though. We'll probably do a draft because the draft of Coley was good. We'll do a draft. We'll think about something along those lines.
You should go into the Fippo thing and just type in Shitbo. and just see what they do.
If you scroll down far enough, if you ever if anyone goes to the FIPPO page, you will see I did make a comment. I said, this is ridiculous. I was like... Wait, I got to read exactly what I said. Hang on.
Oh, gee, jilkers. I've had enough of this. This tomfoolery. I want my lunchbox. This is ridiculous.
There was a comment on here that I believe either got deleted. It may still be there, but someone was like, guys, I think what we need to do is give them space. Allow them to sit there and make their own life. And the reply said, fuck you. It's been 2 years. And then there's kind of a comment where I just said, I want to ask for a refund, but it seems as though you don't even reply on that front. At this point, most people are okay with waiting, but your refusal to post consistent updates is setting people off. And they replied to me, we will post an update. Oh, I was the one. I was the comment that got them to say, we'll post an update this week.
Oh, so you posted this update this week.
I posted it like 2 weeks ago. I said, like, this is hilarious. Like, where's your, like, at this point, even they need to be like, this is funny. This is a fucking lunchbox, and there's a war in our comment section. And so then they replied to me, we'll have an update this week, and people held them to it because they're like, where the fuck's the update? Where's the fucking update?
They just send you the FIPPO, and it's made of old Juicero parts.
Well, the problem with the lunchbox is apparently they had them all made, and then every time they tested them, everything leaked out. Like, just the liquid leaked. At this point, just send – I'd rather you just send me my lunch, and it just leaks all over my bag. Whatever. Like, at least I know I got the fucking thing. The first problem was cutlery, and then it was the panels, the wood finish looked bad. Yeah, it was a never-ending fucking saga. All right. That's it. Anything else, Trill? Mr. TB?
No. Send it.
Okay, for Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Thursday.
Have a good week. Get the box off.
Whisper in the dark, where we gonna go?